Tonight on The Download, hell or high water director David McKenzie, stand-up comedian Neil Brennan, and the last Bears camp report with Adam Hogue. And now here's your host, a man who has some experience in turning the pool different colors, Justin Coffin.
No, my days of, you know, taking care of business in the pool before they added that dye. I mean, that's for rookie mistake, right?
Right.
Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. I'm very excited to be with you. A beautiful night here in Chicago, and we've got a great show. I'm excited. Neil Brennan's going to join us tonight. Neil Brennan's one of my favorite stand-up comedians. He is so funny, and he's got such a great pedigree. He was the creator of, co-creator of the Dave Chappelle Show on Comedy Central, Chappelle Show. So that was considered one of the best comedy programs of a generation, and Neil Brennan was one of the guys behind it. Neil Brennan is doing stand-up. He actually took his act outside of the comedy club, and he took his show Three Mics to the off-Broadway stage, which is somewhat unique for stand-up comedians to do, to actually take it to a theater. But like I said, he sets up three microphones on stage, one for traditional stand-up, one for one-liners he's working on, and then a third mic for real, for emotional stuff, as he says. It's a tremendous creative approach to doing performance and stand-up comedy, and it's coming to Talia Hall here in Chicago a little bit later in the month. So we're going to talk with Neil Brennan tonight about his career and also about hanging up his podcast. He had a great podcast, Champs, that he's not doing anymore, and sort of getting sick of doing podcasts, which, you know, comics have been doing. It's almost become like a resume builder for stand-up comedians in L.A. I mean, they have to have a podcast. You have to have a, you know, you have to have social media. You have to have a podcast. You have to have a reel. You have to have a showcase show that you do at some back of some bar in L.A. Neil Brennan is hanging it up for now. He's getting sick of it. So we'll talk with him about that coming up. Also tonight, Scottish director David McKenzie. This guy's amazing. This Hell or High Water is the new film starring Chris Pine and Jeff Bridges. It's a really great. It's really an update, a contemporary Western, if you will. Instead of horses, they're Camaros. Instead of cowboys, there's, I guess it would be Texas Rangers, you know? Jeff Bridges plays a Texas Ranger on his way out. It's a really good movie. It's a very good look at rural West Texas. And an even better story about the haves and the have-nots, or as it said, the have-nots, because more and more often, all that's left are the have-nots. And in Texas, that's really the portrait that's painted of rural Texas. So we'll talk with David McKenzie, a Scottish director, about getting it right. How do you, for who've never been to West Texas, how do you direct, how do you make it look right? How do you make it feel right? How do you not only balance the story, which is a story that is so American in the way that it's about robbing banks and trying to keep up with, you know, Robin, essentially, you know, the idea of, you know, farmers against banks, essentially. It's a very American story. And how do you do that as a Scottish filmmaker? So we'll talk with David McKenzie coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Also tonight, you know, last week we had Mike Fouché from The Daily Line in here, and he said just, you know, when talks start to break down between the teachers and the Chicago public schools, you'll see the rhetoric ratchet up in the media. Right. Last week, I was like, what's going on? Are they going to do this? He's like, well, you know, they're still working it out. When you start to see the city, CPS, Karen Lewis, they start to yap at the media, you know, there's trouble. Well, today there was a lot of yapping. If you're paying attention to the news, both Forrest Claypool and Rahm Emanuel talking about sacrifice and that the teachers need to sacrifice or there'll be cuts in the classroom. They also expect, as you saw this week, kind of shot across the bow, they expect a little bit for teachers to just sort of take the same deal that they were offered earlier in the year that they rejected. So it's starting to get a little heated when it comes to teacher talks here in Chicago. Mike Fouché is back. We'll talk about what this means as we get closer and closer to the beginning of the CPS school year. Also tonight, We'll keep tabs on the Chicago Bears. Tomorrow, the Chicago Bears play the Denver Broncos. We'll keep tabs on that. We'll also keep tabs on the Chicago Cubs, who are just making mincemeat of all of their competition. I mean, geez, 8 in a row, going for 9 tonight. Jason Hamill, Ham Jam, as he's known, right? We'll pitch tonight, probably to Miggy Montero, who's known as Freeze Frame. So Ham Jam to Freeze Frame. We're getting so close to naming every single, giving a nickname to every single Chicago Cub that's coming up tonight as well. Matt Klein is back. Tonight's Cubs, John Lester and David Ross. Sound good? We know David Ross is called Grandpa. That's the thing. But we can't accept that. John Lester, David Ross. They're going to be our Cubs on Picnic tonight, where we're trying to give legitimate, authentic names to all of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. So lots to do tonight on the program, and of course we're going to fan jam the Olympics. I see right now that the women's beach volleyball is back in action. So I think it's time for a break. You need to watch what happens here with Match Point coming up. I think it's just the beginning of the set. Anyway, news, weather, and traffic with Veronica Carter and Esmeralda Leon tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, let's get the show on the road. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here today's top stories. Hard to believe it's only really been a week since Donald Trump put his foot in his mouth by criticizing the parents of a fallen soldier. But what's more unbelievable is that most people have forgotten that controversy for the newer controversy. Trump's Second Amendment quip against Hillary Clinton is still being debated. Did he mean that the Second Amendment folks should shoot his political rival? Or did he mean that the Second Amendment folks should shoot his political rival? One thing's for sure, Trump is off message once again. Like a broken washing machine, he's just wasting cycles. Tomorrow, Hillary Clinton speaks about her plans for the economy. Remember when Trump did that this week? Remember? Because that's long gone. Good work. Senator Mark Kirk says he's still not supporting Donald Trump for president. Instead, he's going to write in Randy of the Redwoods. No, I joke. He's going to write in Colin Powell for president. When told this, Powell was like, you know, I've deleted more emails than anybody, right? Just so we're on the up and up. A West Loop tanning salon owner was arrested on rape charges when he left the Cook County Jail after posting bond. He ran away from reporters. Full sprint. He's accused of raping 9 women, some inside the tanning studio. Ran right into the middle of a 4-lane street. Good thing he knows how to run, because he'll need that skill when his cellmate is chasing him down in prison. A petition is circulating to change the name of Humboldt Park, the historic Westside Park, to change the name to Harambe, after the Cincinnati Zoo gorilla who was shot. Remember that earlier this summer? Hundreds of people have signed it. What? I mean, I've heard of gentrifying areas, but this is even too white for me. Oh, the gorilla was so cute. Let's change the name of that pretty park that we never go to. Oh, it's crazy. What's going on in pop culture news today? What's trending? Let's see here. Ryan Lochte's hair turned green from the pool. Rapper Iggy Azalea's butt is now too big. And Crystal Pepsi's back. Yeah, there you go. That was The Download's trending report. A Suicide Squad fan is suing the movie because there wasn't enough of the Joker. He's suing for false advertising because there were Jared Leto scenes in the trailer that didn't appear in the film. Really? False advertising? Can I get in on that? Just for the lack of the Will Smith soundtrack rap? A Suicide Squad. Bum, bum, bum. There's the Joker. And then there's the squad. I'm not a rapper. There's just so much there. Come on, Will. So, yeah, class action, that thing. The new season of Hard Knocks starts up on HBO, and it's following the training camp of Jeff Fisher and the LA Rams. Fisher reportedly cut a player for bringing a girl back to his dorm room. Come on, dude, you should know better. You got to pay off the RA with cash or at least a working microwave. Rookie mistake. I mean, he was a rookie. Also, you know camp is like 2 weeks long, right? Seriously, keep it in your pants. What was the allure? Babe, you gotta come back. Oh yeah, I got a 300-pound offensive lineman that I share this room with, but he snores. Don't worry about it. Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union have bought an old Gold Coast mansion, which was featured as the exterior for the show Webster. Remember that? It's a beautiful mansion, but it ain't no South Beach. Wait till that old radiator heat kicks in. There might be the ghost of Webster. In weather, while we're enjoying the nice weather yesterday, a twister touchdown out at Midway. Are you kidding me? For the first time in 10 years, and we didn't even know it. Good thing our tornado warning systems work in this town. Jeez, nobody hurt, no damage, but still, unsettling. Also, here comes a mini heat wave. It's going to be 90 for the next couple days, but it's going to feel like 6,000. So essentially, Chicago's going to turn into a 1980 7-Up commercial. Just a bunch of random 7-Up showers while we dance around in solid pastels. Look it up. It's the best commercial ever. In sports, okay, I won't tell you what happened in the Olympics today. Thanks to NBC choosing to run some of the daytime stuff in primetime. I still don't get it, though, since it's not really a time zone issue. So get it together, Rio. I think, you know what I think? I think it's an anti-American Olympic sentiment. You want your dominant women gymnastics? Here, enjoy it at 2 o'clock. I don't even know if that was French, Brazil. I'm not really, I got to work on the accent. CBSSports.com went down today for most of the day, which is probably because hackers hate spoilers. I'm sure the Olympic hackers were like, don't you give us real-time results. I'll delete. No, it's just getting worse. Bears play their first preseason game tomorrow against Denver, and then it's back to Halas Hall for the rest of the way. I personally can't wait for tomorrow night's game because I'm a huge fan of David Fales. You know he's going to play like 3.5 quarters. There you go. David Fales. The Bears did sign former Steeler offensive lineman Mike Adams. He's a former second-round pick in 2012, but he missed all of last year with a back injury. Ugh. Back injury offensive lineman. The ghost of Chris Williams. Not good. The Cubs won again last night, and they get the Angels again tonight at Wrigley. The first team to 70 wins, and the fastest team to 70 wins since, you know what, I don't know. I just got lazy and forgot to Google it. Some drama at Wrigley. Tommy La Stella, the utility infielder, is refusing to go back to the minors, saying either play me or cut me. So this could be the end of the Tommy Gun era at Wrigley. The Cubs signed former Diamondbacks pitcher Josh Colemanter to a minor league deal. The White Sox beat the Royals last night, but Chris Sale did not factor in the decision. He stays put at 14 wins. What else? They play again tonight. That's pretty much all I have on the White Sox for the rest of the season. They play again the next night. And finally, a man scaled the Trump Tower in New York using suction cups. Yep. This proves that no wall can be too tall and no wall too wide for crazy guys who have suction cups. I don't know. Make America suction again? I don't know. It just seems really stupid. That's the carryout for August 10th, 2016. Hey, did you order the coffee? Really, because we made it back at 7 a.m. I mean, it's still hot. More to come tonight on The Download. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, David McKenzie's going to join us, the director of Hell or High Water. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line is here. We'll talk about escalating teacher contract negotiations. Ah, it's that time of year. So it's a download here on WGN. Stay with us. Not only is this a theme song for Mike Fouché and the Daily Line, but it's also a theme song for the teachers' union and the city and negotiations. Time to cool
you know,
it now.
Every time I hear this song, I just want to get some, you know, parachute pants and some...
And negotiate a teacher's contract.
Just, yeah, man. Just like in the 80s.
The Daily Line, of course, a subscription news site that covers all things Illinois politics, nationally. You can do anything you want with the Daily Line. Good to see you, Mike.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Join us every Wednesday here on the program. All right, so let's get right to it. I'm fascinated because the last week we were talking about how quiet it was on the teacher negotiation front.
Yeah.
We're getting closer and closer to showtime here.
Right.
And there has been a lot of talk in the earlier part of this year about a teacher strike. Last week we talked about how quiet it was, and we'll know if it starts to get a little bit more cantankerous when they start talking to the
right.
media. Today, they start talking to the
right.
media.
Well, Monday, flablam, is when the school budget came out. And one of the you know, we had been talking about, well, how, you know, how much of CPS's of their budget gap are they going to close? And they had started in the spring. They were saying we're going to have a $1.1 billion budget gap, mm-hmm. guys. And so they said, oh, well, we came up with all this stuff. And, you know, looks like we've closed all of it. But really? I mean, and so right, then when right. you dig a little more, it seems that they're assuming that there's some savings from some things that they've negotiated with the teachers. And then what's really funny is that then when you looked at the budget, it was like, you know, you asked questions and they never answered it directly. We, you know, our team and other reporters talking with Claypool and his team on Monday were like, so, you know, what's the part with the teachers? What have you agreed on? And they just wouldn't say. And then really what ultimately it is when you start doing the math and you start looking at stuff closely is they just anticipated that the teachers were going to say, oh, yeah, remember that contract we rejected back in January?
We're sorry, we'll take it.
We'll take it. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, hey, right. that's cool.
And I talked about that. That was an interesting moment because Karen Lewis and leadership at the Chicago Teachers Union were like, you know what? This is not a bad deal. We'll take it to the rank and file. Right. The rank and file said, punt, get out of here. We don't want anything to do with
down.
It. Big thumbs
they
down.
They hated it.
So
hated
how did
it.
The, how does, I mean, is Forrest Claypool just setting up the Chicago Teachers Union to fail or to be the bad guy by putting into the budget the same contract that they rejected?
This is one of the, you know,
is this politics?
Rahm Emanuel has this really weird term that I still don't understand. He keeps talking about a three-way handshake, and I really want somebody to show me. A three-way handshake.
Where all the fingers go, right.
I don't know. Whatever. So the three-way handshake that he keeps talking about is the state has chipped in some money. The taxpayers are chipping in some money. So CPS got mm-hmm. approval from the state to raise property taxes. And so then the last part is
labor.
So the unions are supposed to put in something. So he's always very careful to say, everybody else has put in their piece. Now it's time for the teachers to put in their piece. But what the teachers keep reminding everybody is, hey, you know, number one, there's already been three rounds of cuts now because they fired 1,000 more people last week. So there have been three rounds of cuts. And the teachers have, you know, saying that they've really kind of they've done their share. Already.
Yeah, they're saying it's disingenuous to turn the conversation to teachers. It's your turn to sacrifice when they have been sacrificing over the last couple of years.
Right. Well, over the last year, especially in the last year. And the argument that they make is, look, already CPS is operating at a bare bones operation. You know, why do we have to give up more? Because it's not really helping anybody. So, you know, this is the kind of the problem is that then when you talk with both the teachers union and CPS and you say, well, how much money are we talking about that you're negotiating over here? Neither side will say how CPS won't say, well, we need to get X amount of dollars before we can move forward. And CTU will not say, well, we think that CPS is trying to fill an X amount of
money. I stupid to ask, is it not about money? Is there something else that's in there?
It's about money.
It's always about money.
It's about money. I mean, you know, because there's really nothing else to really negotiate about anymore. I mean, the teachers and CPS have long ago stricken all of the fat and all of the extra things that you could be, you know, there's no doodads or gimquacks or whatever it is that are left over to fight about. And so it's really about a certain amount of money. And it seems that amount of money is probably somewhere around $300 million.
Let me ask you, let me go off script for just a second, because this kind of...
Oh, darn. Yeah,
darn,
okay,
here we go. Get rid of it.
Okay.
You know, I hear this all the time about, and especially when we just saw with the budget that they were laying off 1,000 people. And when CPS spokespersons were pressed on it, they said, this is normal. This is just how we do things. They're going to be able to reapply. Some are going to be shifted around. This is how it happens every summer. This is normal. To me, that seems to be part of the problem, the idea that it's normal to have this weird accounting where you lay people off to rehire them and shift around. It just feels to me that
it's
the
not,
way that they budget
not
is not progressive. It's not thinking forward. It's not being creative. Yeah. And that's part of the problem when we get stuck in these negotiations, because it just becomes politics.
It's not normal. And you know, I think that there's definitely some kind of cuts that are going to be done. But the other is that CPS is also anticipating, or not CPS, the teachers union is anticipating that there's going to be some amount of money that the city of Chicago is going to come up with. And so, you know, they're asking for the city of Chicago to either surplus all the TIFs, and nobody really right. knows how much TIF money there is. You know, it could be $800 million. Who knows? But some amount of money that would then be pushed into the schools. Or they've been calling for a new tax, a head tax, which Emmanuel abolished a while ago. A head tax basically is every person that works in a company, the company right. then has to pay a certain
tax
amount
on the amount of employees you have.
Right, the number of employees that you have, which is sort of a way of getting at all the people that commute into the city.
Does Rahm Emanuel, I mean, does he support what some of the progressives go for, the progressive income tax, where there's more of the Hillary Clinton model of taxing the rich? Is he a Democrat that supports that kind of thing, or does he stay away from that?
Sure, but the city doesn't have any vehicles for that. There's no progressive. You can't have an income tax in Chicago without the approval of the state legislature.
Right.
So, you know, really the
doesn't matter what he thinks.
The vehicles that you have left are is that you could create fees on individual things, which is what a head tax is, or you could have, you know, more sales tax, but already Chicago has.
But wasn't there a time in the city's history where the mayor felt he wanted to do something? He can go down to Springfield and make it so.
Well, you know, we have a governor now that's not really down with that anymore. So,
so that's maybe that's part of reform.
So really,
where
we're going at this point is that CPS and the teachers are just going to be butting heads for a while. We're going to have to come up with something. And really, the drop dead is, you could say the drop dead is the start of school, but you have more time that you could go after that, because really, CPS is not going to have a big crash until sometime in December or January.
So,
but then
the next thing is
the city budget.
Could they start the school year without a teacher's contract?
Yeah, absolutely. But the teachers say that they're not going to go another year without a contract.
Right.
So what does that mean? That they're going to go on strike? Who knows? Right? Oh, I mean, it's all up in the air. Every week it just gets worse.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Lines in studio for his regular check-in with us here on The Download. We'll take a quick break. Come back. We got to talk police. Lots happened since we sat down last time here in Chicago. And the police meetings have begun, the police reform meetings in the neighborhoods.
Right.
And we'll talk about fallout from the Paul O'Neill video.
Right.
Mike Fouché in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at the top of the hour, Veronica Carter is going to have Chicago News First. Right now, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio. Mike, we got to talk police reform. The police reform meetings in the communities have begun. We talked, there was the first one was in South Shore. Nice timing that was
Thursday.
A night before they released the video with Paul.
Yeah, well, you know, it was probably more timing of the release than it was of the event, you know, because they set the event like a month ago. And the city, they don't do anything on Monday. Everything is done at 5:30 on Friday.
Right.
Although the O'Neill video was released at 11:30.
Well, let me start here, because this is one of those. I mean, we have been talking about IPRA. We've been talking about reform. We talked about the changes that were sort of brought in police report form earlier in the year. You saw a policy change in the way that it was, what, 6 or 6 to 9 days, and they released a video that was something new and it was supposed to be transparent.
Eight days.
But talk about the reaction, because this video actually comes out in August when there are no city council meetings. They're on break until September.
Yeah.
What has been the political reaction to the way that this video was handled and the content that's in it?
So what's interesting is that we're beginning to actually see that there are organizers who anticipate this sort of stuff. And they prepare for it. So there were protests that came downtown last weekend.
Right.
You know, Black Lives Matter had protests. There were other peace marches in the neighborhoods on the west side.
I mean, they were quick to protest the Eddie Johnson press conference the day of the release.
Yep, that's right.
Right.
And so, you know, these things have really moved, and they're fairly sizable groups of people, you know, a few hundred people that show up. And I think that that's important. We can't forget about that. And because it's the weekend and it's the summer and it's August, we tend to gloss over things, right? But those things are happening. Aldermen, they're as far away from a microphone as possible because it's August and it's their break. There's no city council meeting in August. So, you know, they're really not stepping up and saying anything. And actually, the only chance that aldermen might have to say anything is these hearings that they've been holding last Thursday. And then last night was at Senn High School, and tomorrow night's going to be in Little Village. And they're purposefully, very pointedly, not speaking at these things. They stand up
in the back or what?
No. They sit at the front. They sit at a table. There's like five or six of them that come, and they say, welcome. Thank you very much. This is what we're going to have tonight. And then they welcome people. Yeah. They just shut up, and they welcome people to come up and make statements. And the biggest controversy is that they've been shutting people down, you know, after 4 minutes. It's a standard city council thing that witnesses would speak for three. They started shutting them down at three and then said, okay, fine, we'll make them four.
Right.
And so, you know, people come up and they give testimony.
If that's the worst sort of thing, the controversy is coming out of the meeting, that's not a bad controversy.
But the things that people are saying are pretty rough.
Right.
I mean, there have been people coming up who have been tortured by Burge. There are people talking about being strip searched on the street by police. There are some pretty horrific stories that people are telling. And, you know, I haven't gone, but our reporters have gone, and they've said it's been pretty harrowing. And some of our reports have had some pretty harrowing stuff. It is a lot of people that are talking about how they really do not trust the Chicago Police Department to protect them. And, you know, you could argue, well, the police department's job is to be constantly looking for bad guys. But what's clearly happening is that many, many more than bad guys are being affected by the policing methods that have been used for some time. And this is making it so that there's a large segment of Chicago that does not believe that the police department works for them.
Well, one thing to mention, the DOJ comes out with a report on Baltimore, a scathing report. I wouldn't say it was out of the ordinary. People were not shocked by what came out, but it actually said that police officers went out of their way to racially profile.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, so this is exactly the kind of report that is being worked on right now for Chicago. The Department of Justice was...
They were brought in after
Freddie Gray.
Right.
And the study is incredible. You know, they interviewed hundreds of people. They did ride-alongs with police officers. They interviewed everybody at the Fraternal Order of Police. They went through hundreds of thousands of pages of records. And they would have circumstances where police officers would do all kinds of unconstitutional seizures and searches. They would make excuses in order to stop people on the street. It was very clear that the police department's process has been hurting people, has been hurting the trust of the police department and the police department in Baltimore's ability to protect people.
In that case, there are firings.
There are a few.
So
but
what
very very few.
You've been covering police for a while now. You know that a Department of Justice, you know, I guess report will be coming out at some point or another. If it's anything like Baltimore, is it the same concept? I mean, is it going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be the exact same concept. It is the exact same concept. Even larger, though, because Baltimore's police force is, you know, just a few thousand, whereas Chicago is about 12,800. So it's a much larger organization of sworn police officers that they're going to be speaking with and working through. And so we're going to end up with a report that's going to be like this. Now, the report that came out in Baltimore today is the factual findings. So first, what we'll get is a factual findings. And I think that's what's really interesting is that Baltimore is a very large metropolitan area, and that we're going to get a report that's going to be of this intensity. And I think that we should anticipate that it's going to have a lot of things like this that are going to be for Chicago. And I think that it's going to be a major, major problem to deal with.
So you said tomorrow the police reform hearings go to Little Village?
Little Village.
Is that, and then there's how many more?
After that, there's another two more. There's five altogether. I think there's another one that's going to be in Englewood, and I can't remember where the other one is.
Well, it's something to pay attention to, and you can check that on. I'm sure you can find it out online. But the
you can read the Daily Line.
Read the Daily Line.
We posted the story for free today about yesterday's go to the Daily Line.net, and you can find the story about it.
DailyLine.net, the publisher Mike Fouché in studio. He's with us every Wednesday night. All right, so next week we'll find out a little bit more about teachers' contracts.
Hopefully. And we'll
continue to talk, because there is no city council meetings.
These police reform meetings are it. This is what they're doing. And
we should do a live remote.
Yeah, I think actually that would be really intense.
And then
it would
I
be
have,
really
it's
good.
My job to cut people off at 3 minutes.
Right.
Excuse me? No, nope,
right.
That's it. Bam.
Right.
Yep,
right.
Up. We got to take a break. We got the news.
I'm sure the Sergeant at Arms from the City Council would be happy to give you
yeah,
that
right.
job.
All right, Mike Fouché, good to see you, bud.
Thanks.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new movie Hell or High Water opens this weekend in the Chicago area. The movie stars Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine and tells the story of two down-and-out brothers who need to find money to save the family farm, so they turn to robbing Texas banks. But like any good crime heist film, the lines are blurred between the good guys and the bad guys and what has to be done to make it in today's world of the haves and the have-nots. The director of the film is David Mackenzie. The Scottish filmmaker has made his name in several genres with films like Startup and Perfect Sense, starring Ewan McGregor. This movie, Hell or High Water, is being called one of the best of the year, and it is my pleasure to welcome director David Mackenzie to the program. David, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I'm interested. I mean, it's a great film. What about the script interests you in directing it?
It was a lovely script. To read it, it was a very, very nicely formed script, which is amazing because Taylor wrote that without any development. He just came straight, he wrote it very, very sort of from the heart. Mm-hmm. And it just, as a read, I read it and immediately fell in love with it and really wanted to just make it like that, which we kind of did. We pretty much didn't develop beyond what it was. So it seemed to have I was looking for in a movie. It had a big sweeping scope. It had a strong sense of place. It had some great characters. It had some good, exciting kind of, high speeds and, sort of cops and robber type things. But it seemed to, it's a film about something. It seemed to have all this depth that you could kind of tap into. And it had a satisfying kind of narrative shape. And so for me, I was just like, this is great. I want to do this.
As I mentioned at the top, I mean, you've worked in a lot of different genres. What is it about? I mean, essentially, this is a modern day Western in the way that it's a bank heist movie, but at the same time, desperados that are running from the law, outlaws. What was it about this kind of genre, this American South movie, kind of grabbed you?
Well, I like these kind of things. Weird enough, when I read it, I didn't sort of think of it as a Western. I thought it reminded me of this movie by Don Siegel called Charlie Varick, which, has themes of the Western because of the robberies and because of all the other things that were going on. I didn't immediately connect it to being so. I know it is now, and obviously when we were making it, we were channeling it at that too. But it felt like it was many more things of that. It's a road movie. It's a buddy movie. It's a snapshot of contemporary America. It's also something that kind of has a certain nostalgia to the past. I'm a big fan of the 1970s films, including the Westerns, but not just the Westerns. The American cinema was kind of really shining in that early 70s period with a lot of humanity, a lot of great characters, a lot of great actors doing character-based films based on real things and a kind of strong poetic sense. And I love those films.
Yeah.
And this film felt like a chance to kind of channel some of that into something that's very contemporary. So it just felt right for me.
I guess, in the bones of it, it is a Western, but at the same time, there's so many things that are part of the film that defy it. One of it is there's comic elements. Jeff Bridges is pretty funny in his role. Even in serious situations, there's this comic element that's brought in. Talk about directing that and trying to pull that out.
Well, it's interesting for me because I always find that the movies I do, that there's a certain comedy element that comes out, and there's it's kind of gallows humor or whatever. So there are some sort of obviously comedic things from the script, like for example there's a rude waitress scene which is just brilliant, and then there's some other kind of comedic moments that come out of the performance and they come out of the sort of deadpanning of things, and it's something that I'm always looking for in a film to kind of release the tension and to put some heart into things, and so I'm never trying to make straight out comedy stuff or looking for kind of cheesy comedy beats, but to try and find the comedy out of the situation. And so that's kind of what we did, and all credit goes to the fantastic cast, who some of whom were we had a great text, but we were also improvising around it. And I'm really pleased with the way that this film can be a serious film about serious things, but also have plenty of moments of humor.
Like I said, it's a Western in its bones, but the things that you mentioned that it is at its heart, one of which is just sort of this portrait of rural America, rural Texas, and this down and out, the way that this industry area of Texas is decaying, and how in this day and age in 2016, there's a lot more have-nots than there are haves.
Yeah, I think there's a very strong sense of that, that this landscape is sort of becoming increasingly hostile. There's a thing that Gil Birmingham's character, Alberto, who plays Jeff Burbridge's a partner, he talks about that, you know, this land was taken, who, by the way, is Native American. This land was taken from his people 150 years ago by armies and all those things, and now the land's being taken from these people, but it's not by armies, it's by corporations in some way. And that sense that people are being sort of pushed out of things feels like a theme that's relevant to know. You know, it feels like we're all in some way kind of, being touched by these things.
It really is. And I mean, that I kind of mentioned at the top that it blurs the line about who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. And obviously bank robbing is illegal and that's a crime, and bank robbers are the bad guys. But there is an anti-banking sentiment in this film. And at a certain point, as the viewers, you're watching this, you really start to either sympathize, empathize, or just root on the brothers.
Yeah, I think that's part of the kind of the joy of the shape of the film. And one of the challenges of it was, you know, we withhold a lot of information about what they're doing and why they're doing it. So when you first meet them, they are, they're men in masks, pushing a woman bank teller around and trying to get some money, and you're so you have absolutely zero reason to have any sympathy for them, and then slowly you sort of start getting to understand why they're doing what they're doing and their circumstances and their relationship, and you start to reach out into areas where you are sympathizing with them even though they're not doing good things. And I think that's a really interesting place. I mean, there's something about the Great Depression in the 1930s, obviously has echoes with now, and some of the sort of outlaw heroes of that in America. And I think of things like Pretty Boy Floyd, and the song Pretty Boy Floyd, sort of ends with some men will rob you with a 6-6 gun, and some men will rob you with a fountain pen. I paraphrase, I can't remember it exactly, but I've never met an outlaw who drove a family from their home. And that idea that the outlaws are bad, but they're not going to send a family out. It feels like that's a long time ago, but it feels like those themes are as resonant today as they ever were.
On the line with me, director David McKenzie, Hell or High Water, which comes out this weekend. You know, and it is being touted as one of the best films of the year. One of the great things about it is with the intensity of it and it is a heist movie. There's a lot of really stressful moments, but there is a calmness to it. As a director, as you put this together and you work on the pace of the film, that's intentional to sort of slow down and almost, in a weird way, I guess the word would be make it casual. I mean, these guys are almost approaching some of this stuff that we know in cinema or in real life to be very stressful and very edgy and very thrilling. They approach it in a very casual manner.
There are some scenes that we're working hard to make kind of purely exciting, and some scenes that feel like they need to breathe a bit more. But actually, oddly enough, there are quite a lot of moments where you sort of don't want the words to be doing all the work. You want the silence between the words to be doing as much work, and just letting the thing kind of slow down a bit, so that then you can pick up the pace again. So it's all about kind of rhythms, and it's all about changing the shape of things. So you're not just sort of constantly being assaulted high tension or whatever. You've got a journey to go on, and that was kind of the intention that we tried to do.
One of the big characters in this film is the place, is rural Texas and the towns that these the banks are located in. As a Scottish filmmaker coming in and really being able to represent the heart of Texas, you wanted to make that a character you can tell. How difficult was it to make that a legitimate and authentic place?
It was a challenge, obviously, because I'm not from there. I have spent a little bit of time in West Texas, so I wasn't going completely blind. But it was, I felt a very strong sense of responsibility to do justice to the sense of place that felt so important to the material. And we had an additional challenge in that we were representing Texas, but shooting in New Mexico because there were financial incentives to do so. And so the first thing I released was I took my director of photography and my production designer,
and we toured around West Texas and really tried to get under the skin of what these places looked like and felt like. We didn't have a lot of time, so it was just to kind of like, you know, get through it. But we did all we could, and then we tried to kind of find ways of transplanting that into New Mexico. And I feel like it's one of the achievements of the film that a lot of people think that there's a very good, strong sense of a Texas place there. And so we've done what we set out to do, which is great.
There's a lot of themes in this movie that are really along the idea of a folktale. I mean, we know the story of bank robbers, you know, robbing to save something, and as you mentioned, you know, outlaws don't. Never driven families from their land or from their homes. You know, there's a lot to do with Native American spirituality. There's a lot to do with moving on, Jeff Bridges and retiring his character. You know, when you think about all of those things, is it difficult as a director when you have all of these pretty big themes that are together in one film to balance it and make sure it comes out in a way that is palatable to the audience?
Well, that's, in a way, the kind of the heart of what my job is. My job is to try to show this world, to get great performances out of people, and to extract all the necessary essences, and then to put it together in a way that's balanced. It doesn't push things in the wrong way, and tries to get all the shapes absolutely right. You know, and to that extent, I have a very, very strong relationship with a very great editor, Jake Roberts, who I've worked with on many films, and him and I spent quite a long time editing this film and getting the shapes and flows right. It came together very quickly, the first cut. I like to cut as we're shooting, and so we did show a cut of the film at the wrap party. But then, having done that, we did a lot of fine-tuning and balancing. But all the way through the shooting of the film, I was very conscious of the balance of all the themes and trying to make sure that good taste prevailed in terms of the representation of all these elements. And we had a strong feeling when we were making it that we would doing the right thing. I think everyone on the shoot felt it was a special film.
The film is called Hell or High Water. It comes out this weekend, stars Jeff Bridges, Ben Foster, Chris Pine. The director, David McKenzie, took some time out to talk to me tonight. I appreciate it. David, great film, and continued success with your career.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your questions and your support for the film. Much appreciated.
Bringing the country tonight, Pete. I like it. You got to do it, you know. Talking Hell or High Water, West Texas, you got to bring the country. Did I steal?
Exactly right.
It's a really good movie. This job is fun because, you know, I've said it on the air before. I'm not much of a moviegoer. You know, there are a lot. Nick DiGiulio is an unbelievable moviegoer. You know, he goes and Patty goes and people, you know, they spend their time. That's part of their show. They do it. I have never really been in love with cinema. I love, obviously, when you're, you know, taken away with it and sort of different, you know, sort of transported to a different realm. It's great. The morals that come out of it. But a lot of times it's just the laziness of actually getting there. You know, I've told you my fights and we've talked about it on The Worst where I'm not a big fan of the communal experience of going to the theater.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. Right.
But I'll tell you, you know, a lot of the ability to have these directors and artists and actors and people who are involved and just creative people on the program, and to do a good interview, you want to see their film. So I'm able to go see screeners, things of that nature. And I'm seeing so many films that otherwise I've never seen Hell or High Water. Just not my kind of film. I'm definitely more of like a Steve Harvey kind of film guy. Steve Harvey puts out a romantic comedy, I'm there. Anything, like I'll probably go see War Dogs, Todd Phillips movie that's coming out. We should try to get Todd Phillips on. Todd Phillips did Old School and he did The Hangover. And I'm a big fan of performer or directors and creative types that have success. If I like two of their things, three of their things, I'll go see it. A great example, Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy. I've been a big fan of Family Guy from the get-go. This day and age, you don't watch it as much as I used to. But when the movies Ted come out, the Ted movies come out, they're not the greatest, but I go. Like, I give money because I'm like, I want to support this artist. He can do no wrong in my eyes. It may not be great, but you're like, oh, I want to go see it. So Todd Phillips, I'm going to go see War Dogs. And the same reason I watch Vice Principals on HBO, because I'm a huge fan of Danny McBride, what he did with Eastbound and Down. And that show is getting better and better and better. I don't know if you're caught up.
No.
Come on, man. That was going to be our show. We're going to talk about it every week.
I get caught up. I was, you know.
Do you need a night off? You want me to get Elephant here and we'll do something, you know, so you can catch up on Vice Principals?
I do need to catch up on TV. It's always been an issue. And
are you caught up on Ballers?
I don't watch Ballers either. Oh, it's not allowed in my house to do that on the sly or on the train or watch it on HBO Go or something.
You know, I'm going to have to talk to your household. How dare you say that Ballers is not allowed in your house? No, I did. It's pretty dumb. It's getting to the point now where, but I, you know, there's something about The Rock.
So his Entourage was dumb, and yeah. I watched that for all 7 seasons or however long it was on.
This is kind of the same vein. And one episode, they're getting really good at the end of the episodes having something happen that you're like, oh, man, that's terrible. Credits. You know, that's or, oh, man, life's looking up. Host to Bellini, you know, toasted to, and then it's credits. That's the HBO kind of guy show where it either goes up or goes down. That's why I like Vice Principals. It's almost always down. But those guys, Jody Hill and Danny McBride, those guys are great, man. They make great television. And, you know, I have to be honest. I was for Hell or High Water. I was like, well, I don't really know Chris Pine's work that well. I knew him on Star Trek, you know, but I'm like, what's he going to do here? Why would he do this movie? And he was really good. Like, he's a really good, he plays a good sort of, you know, contemplative, down and out Texas boy, you know, and he's one of the brothers who's one of the bank robbers in the movie.
Kind of going back to what Ira Glass was saying last week, in that I feel like I need to support movies like this because I'm not a big superhero guy, mm-hmm. and I don't like the big blockbusters. I'm more of like just a regular movie,
right,
like I love the Mike Birbiglia movie.
Right.
I want to see those get made. So it's like you kind of just have to go to these movies, as Ira Glass said, come to the movie, show the studios that they can be a success, we can make more of them.
And, you know, coming up, this is awesome. Coming up, I think it's tomorrow night, Jeff Bridges is going to join us. The Jeff Bridges is going to join us. How great is that?
That's amazing.
I have to pull back the want and desire to just ask about Lebowski. Like, that's one of the movies that I love, and I know that he's probably sick and tired of talking about Lebowski, and that's not what he wants to talk about, but, you know, and I'll prepare, you know, seeing the movie, and I want to talk to Jeff Bridges, but, oh, I want to talk about Lebowski.
I'm sure you can squeeze a
Lebowski.
Squeeze
a couple, so, yeah.
He just had a death in the Lebowski family.
Yeah, the Mr. Lebowski.
Yeah,
so he's coming up. Another movie, you know, Southside and Me, is that what it's called?
Southside with You.
The Barack and Michelle Obama story, that's coming up. We're going to talk with them. Also, Kubo and the Two Strings, Travis Knight. Those movies are tremendous. I saw that movie just this week. That's a tremendous movie. That's going to be I don't know what its competition is going to be, but it's got Oscar on it. Because, you know, a lot of times...
The best animated movie?
Yeah, because you'll get animated movies out of the cycle. They don't follow the same idea that they, you know, have to... be released at a certain time. You know, a lot of the Oscar movies, they'll come out in the fall.
Right, yeah.
You know, like that's
Christmas
when
Day.
Yeah, right, that kind of stuff. And in this case, animated films don't always... This one has, because it's from the same makers, like films who do Paranorman and did Box Trolls. Yeah, all these movies. Coraline, have you seen Coraline? That's
no.
A great movie. And those all have been up for that category. And so this is the fourth of those features, and I just have a feeling this one is much more sort of heartbreaking, emotional, and just scenically, whoa. So Travis Knight's coming through next week. We're going to have him.
I see the ad that's in the train station. It's in my train station, and every time I walk by there every day, I think, boy, that is an amazing cast, because it's got McConaughey,
right.
Charlize Theron, George Takei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I remember.
Mm.
But it's there's a lot of them. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of celebrities in that.
You're absolutely right. This is the time for these kind of movies, and I'm glad that they're getting their chance to shine in August, where it's usually traditionally just superhero movies.
And, you know, I'm proud to say, and I know you are too, that, you know, we want to support movies that aren't necessarily blockbusters that are $250 million to make. And, to, you know, you see the, you know, Suicide Squad and Ghostbusters too, and that's sort of what we get. But to have movies like Florence Foster Jenkins or Hell or High Water or Kubo and the Two Strings and be able to actually talk about movies that are not being made at huge amounts of budgets at in the mainstream Hollywood sort of, you know, pipeline is a good thing. We'll continue to do it. Oh, what a night. Late December back in 63. What a very special time for me. Cause I remember what a night. Oh, Javi Baez almost on cue. Hit one to the wall. Mike Trout jumps up and grabs one in the Wrigley Ivy. It was like almost like a perfect introduction for Sam Panjanovic, who is in studio with me here on WGN Radio Sports. We're going to talk about the Cubs surge, the sixth surge. That'd be a good name for a movie. And also a little bit about the Bears who are playing the Broncos tomorrow. Sam, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
So let's first talk about this. You've been covering, I mean, they're surprisingly all season long, Joe Maddon has avoided the drama. Now, this isn't that big of a dramatic story.
Not at all.
But Tommy La Stella really does not want to go back to the minors.
So here's what happened. All right, Tommy La Stella gets sent down to AAA Iowa on the 29th of July. So right now it's the 10th of August, and you have 10 days to report. When your boss tells you to go somewhere, usually you go somewhere. You get that 10-day grace period. La Stella didn't show up to Iowa. And people are wondering, where is he?
Right.
Because you're supposed to be there. Right. So the AAA Iowa writers are saying, he's not here. He's not here. Where is he? Turns out, and Jesse Rogers from ESPN broke the story yesterday, give credit where credit's due, he talked to La Stella, and La Stella said that he's only going to play baseball again for the Cubs. He's not going to Iowa, and he's not playing anywhere else.
So he's like, I'm either playing at Wrigley Field on the Major League squad, or I'm not playing at all.
I'm either playing for the World Series favorite, or I will never play again.
He's what? I mean, he's 50. He's got, was he 48 years old?
He's 27 years old, but here's the key. And Pete, you know all about Tommy La Stella. This is a fifth infielder. This is a utility guy. This is a left-handed pinch hitter. This is not Anthony Rizzo. This is not Chris Bryant, Jake Arrieta, Lester.
What is a guy like Theo Epstein, and what does he say to that? I mean, has he talked to the press about the idea of a player essentially sort of setting his own course?
It's funny you ask that, because the big issues, Theo's there. When it's an issue like this, Jed Hoyer's there. So Jed Hoyer showed up yesterday to Wrigley, and he talked for about 8 minutes, and he said all the right things. And they're good about not throwing players under the bus, even though he essentially abandoned the AAA Iowa Cubs by not showing up. Jed said he's on the temporary inactive list. There's no spectrum on the range. It could be a week, it could be a month, whatever. But then he also said at the end that this is more than just an issue of frustration. So I don't know if Tommy La Stella hit the bottle. I don't know exactly what happened, but this is seriously something that there's a reason he's not there. And he hasn't really communicated with a lot of people in the organization. So they're wondering where he is. Apparently, he's back home in New Jersey, like swinging at batting practice in the cage. He's not going to Iowa, though, which is where he was sent.
All right. And as I said, I mean, the Cubs have been pretty fortunate to have avoided drama like this all season long.
Except for when they traded for the domestic violence closer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But it seems like here we go where, I mean, how important is Tommy La Stella to the Cubs clubhouse? I mean, he's a fifth infielder. Is the teams are standing up to him, are standing up for him, Adam LaRoche style, or is it sort of like, wherever Tommy's at, we're winning games.
I think actually the Cubs have won 8 in a row since he got sent down. Right? They're on an 8-game winning streak. They've won their last 8. They're 9 out of their last 10 wins to losses. So 9-1 last 10. I don't think they need Tommy La Stella. They are 29 games above .500. They're in first place without him. He's just a guy that Joe Maddon likes to use late in games because he's a really good pinch hitter, and he doesn't have a lot of options on the left side of the plate. So that's why he's valuable. He plays when Chris Bryant's tired. He plays when Javi Baez maybe has a thumb injury or something and he needs a day off. This is not a guy that's going to start when the Cubs are in October.
Let me ask you about Javi Baez, because at the beginning of the year, there was thought he'd be sort of a utility guy. He'd move around. I'm surprised, and injuries have played a big part of this. Now that Jorge Soler is back, does Javi Baez continue to get regular at-bats? Is he a guy who is in this Cubs lineup every single day?
Not every single day. He'll probably play 4 or 5 times a week. And this was something I actually asked Joe Maddon about in May. I said, can you afford not to have that glove in the diamond? Because that's one of the best gloves on the team. No matter how old he is or how long he's been up here, that is a flashy glove. He can play third, short, second. They played him in center. He's valuable late in games. And Joe does a lot of shuffling. He'll throw better gloves on the field in the 8th and 9th inning. So he does still kind of protect him from guys that he doesn't do well against. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but ultimately, doesn't Javi Baez, isn't he the odd man out? If you go to a playoff game, don't you go Soler, Fowler, Hayward, Bryant, Russell, Zobrist, Rizzo?
Baez will play against every lefty. No, okay. He'll play against every left-handed pitcher. Now, there's more righties than lefties, both in life and in baseball, so you know that he's going to get less games than others. But here's what the Javi Baez thing is. Ben Zobrist is up there. I think he just turned 35. He's okay, either 34
so
or 35.
Off, yeah.
So the keys to second base for the Chicago Cubs in 2 years go to
Javi Baez.
So if you can teach a 23-year-old infielder to stay patient and, hey, you're not going to play 150 games, you'll play 90 or 100 until, you know, the contract moves on.
Now, and they want a Zobrist for the playoffs because he is patient, because he knows how to go up against a
right.
Madison Zobrist Bumgarner
is a short-term. You'll have Ben playing at a high level this year, next year, probably not much longer after that. So you try and preach patience with a guy, even though he could probably start for the other 29 teams in the league.
All right, so let me ask you this. The Chicago Cubs are on a roll right now.
And eight
in a row. They're playing amazing baseball. Now, they did sweep the A's. They got the inferior
I don't buy into that. You win 8 in a row, it's a tough thing to do.
But I have to ask, I mean, because where they fell and sort of had their moments in June or in July had to do when they had to play some of the bigger arms. Again, the only Achilles heel I can think about for the Cubs team is when those power pitchers from the Mets or the Madison Bumgarners come to town and they shut them down.
Not a lot of teams can hit power pitchers for the record.
But they're the ones that we're going to be facing in the playoffs.
Right.
We saw it happen last year.
There are
a
couple rotations that, you know, give you some doubt, namely the San Francisco rotation, the Washington rotation with Strasburg and Gonzalez and Max Scherzer.
Yeah, right.
Power arms are their weakness. And last year, you guys watched the games, you and Pete both, a lot of strikeouts. And their plan was in the offseason to bring in contact guys, Zobrist, good. Hayward, bad.
Yeah, but Hayward knows how to bat against those guys
in a seventh inning of a playoff game. He hasn't held a bat in about a year. He has been awful.
He's just waiting for the playoffs.
Okay. You said
I'll be
that,
optimistic.
Not me.
I'll be optimistic.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. So the other thing that I think is a big key to this has been the tail end of this rotation. Both Hamill tonight, who's shutting out the Angels through 5 yesterday. Kyle Hendricks is becoming the Cy Young candidate for the Chicago Cubs this year. Lackey, I mean, I saw a stat with their ERA. I mean, it's amazing. These guys are all just pitching lights out.
At home, all 5 starters have an ERA under 3.
It's amazing.
Which
at Wrigley Field.
At Wrigley, right. And a lot of times you get the Wrigley day games, 90 degrees, wind blowing out 20 miles an hour. So it's tough to pitch at home. Hendricks has a 1.19 ERA at home, and then Lester and Arrieta are under 2. So they all pitch well at home. They have 70 wins right now. They're probably going to get that home field advantage, I would imagine. They're going to win the division, even though Cub fans ask me all the time, are we going to hold on? It's like, you lead by 12 games in August. If you don't hold on, it's the biggest collapse of all time.
Right.
So they should be fine. And, you know, now the question is, you know, how do you position that rotation? But if I'm Joe Maddon, I am playing guys where they do well. And I am pitching Kyle Hendricks in Game 2 at home.
Really?
100%. Would you rather have Kyle Hendricks at home in Game 2 or Kyle Hendricks on the road in Game 3?
It's just tough when you have
such
guys in front
of
Lester.
I want John Lester on the road. I want Lester Game 3.
Wow.
On the road. Veteran.
Right.
World Series rings. He can win on the road. Hendricks,
Okay, so, you know, I joke with Pete all the time that baseball is one of these things where you're not really sure. There is no such thing as a trade deadline. Do the Cubs have any other moves they want to make before the end of the season? Obviously, here come the call-ups, September 1, but also with waivers and things of that nature. Do the Cubs have anything they want to sort of gear up before they get there?
I think they're done. They've added 3 arms at the bullpen, Chapman, Joe Smith, Mike Montgomery. Soler is essentially an addition from injured reserve or from the injury list or whatever you want to call it. And they're hoping, and maybe they might not admit this in public, but they're hoping, and you kind of hinted at it earlier, they hope Jason Hayward is an addition when we get to September and October. But as far as non-waiver moves, they're about done. Maybe they get a bench left-handed bat to replace LaStella,
right.
If he does retire. What an idiot. But if he goes, you got to find a lefty bat. But the major moves are done.
I'm excited. I mean, do you think – I mean, obviously the momentum, the winning 70 games, everything about this team is following the script of what it takes to win a World Series, especially when you go to the playoffs like you did last year. You don't quite make it. You come back, you're even stronger. I mean, for Chicago fans, and there's all this stuff about the curse, and there's all this stuff about, you know, that the Cubs never win anything. But this is almost like the tailor-made script for teams that win.
They were preseason favorites to win the World Series. They are favorites right now on August 10th. They have three of the better pitchers in the National League. They'll probably win about 100 games, which should give them home field. They hit a lot of home runs. They score a lot of runs, draw a lot of walks. All that math lines up for them making a push toward the end of October and getting closer to that elusive World Series championship. When was the last time they won it? I forget.
Yeah, this is
1908.
1908. All right.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Let's shift to football. Are you looking forward to this Bears team?
No.
No?
What's there to look forward to?
Well, okay, the first preseason game tomorrow. We've been checking in camp report today that the camp's over.
Don't you love how the Bears guys are always, they're all amped up and jacked for 7-9 every offseason?
Well, for you've covered the team. Yeah. I mean, they're the same kind of script. I mean, they were a 6-10 team. John Fox's first year. Do you expect improvement? Do you see? I mean, John Fox's career has shown that in the second and third year of his tenure, they usually will make the playoffs.
The defense will be a lot better, especially the front seven. And if the front seven, namely the defensive linemen and the linebackers, can put pressure on the quarterback, it makes the secondary better. So the defense should be a lot better. Akeem Hicks up front. They brought in some linebackers, Freeman, Trevathan. Defense will be fine. On offense, you lost Matt Forte, Martellus Bennett, Jeremy Langford. Can I buy a vowel? I mean,
well, what about Kevin White? Kevin White comes back.
Kevin White missed all of last season.
Yeah,
Kevin
so
White
what?
Hasn't played a game in the National Football League yet.
8 catches, 166, 2
touchdowns.
Alshon
Jeffrey doesn't know the difference between pain and injury, right? You know, he rolled an ankle. Oh, I'm going to miss 3 weeks. So I just don't know who Jay is going to give the ball to make plays in space. And then even if they are good, you've still got Jay, who likes to throw the ball to the other team in a big game.
Oh,
so,
man, you're just so down on this
because
team.
Because they suck. They haven't been good.
12-4.
When was the last time they made the playoffs?
That's
the Bears.
A great question.
When was it?
Was when Jay Cutler broke his knee in the
2010.
Championship, right?
What year is it?
That's pretty bad.
But you're happy about the Bears.
I'm happy because I'm an optimistic person. I believe in half full, not half empty. And I feel like at the beginning of the season, why would I be down on a team when I haven't seen them play yet?
That's fair. And it is a rebuild. So by the nature of what it is, when you bottom out last year, you should incrementally get better. They can win 9 games. They can win 10 games. They can be a wild card team. I don't like the offense. The line is already hurt. You're moving a guy who likes to punch his own teammates to play center. You know, he fought his teammates at Family Fest. Did you see that? He beat the crap out of somebody on Family Fest Day. So, there's a lot of moving parts. I don't like the offense. Defense, probably night and day from last year to this year. Still, probably a 8-9 win team that misses the playoffs.
Can I ask you, do you follow college football at all? I mean, are you paying attention to it? Is the Big Ten, I'm interested. I've been starting to see Coach Fitzgerald all over the place with Northwestern. They didn't have a bad season last year. Do you see the teams like the Northwestern Wildcats or even maybe the Illini with Lovie Smith having any sort of bump this year and surprising people?
The Lovie thing will help long term. He's a guy that'll bring in players over the course of 3 or 4 years. He's going to build a program.
You're already seeing it.
He's not going to build a team this year. He's going to build a program over 4 or 5 years, and that's what that is in Champaign. Northwestern, easy schedule last year. The two biggest games they had, they got crushed against Iowa, against Michigan.
Yeah.
Not close. So let's see them go closer to the top. Let's see them beat some better teams. But certainly, Northwestern can go to a bowl game. Illinois, maybe not this year. But don't count out what Lovie Smith is doing in Champaign.
And Sam, let me put you on the spot one more time since you're such the high
Last
school football
question.
Guy. Last question. High school football, what can we expect?
Oh.
I mean, that's coming up, right? I mean, I was thinking about that today. I'm like, here comes high school football. Like, in the next, 2-3 weeks, it's going to start.
Is it that soon?
Well, I mean, they go back to school next week or
right.
maybe even this week, right?
I'm still researching.
Who won it? Who was the big team last year?
In 8A, geez, I can't even remember.
You can't even remember. I mean,
no,
I know. Right?
Is that embarrassing?
It's not embarrassing, but it tells me that you got a lot of work to do in the next couple weeks.
Yes, that's true. I will be ready. Ask me that question next week, and I will have a scroll. I will write it in Brill Pen.
Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio Sports, breaking down the Cubs, football, and everything else we can think of. Sam, thanks for joining us.
See ya.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Neil Brennan's going to join us. I'm so excited. Neil Brennan's one of my favorite comedians. He is so funny. He is the co-creator of the Chappelle Show, the famed Dave Chappelle Show on Comedy Central, one of the most successful comedy shows in cable history. He is a stand-up comedian who has taken his show from the stand-up club and moved it to off-Broadway, to the theater. And he does a show, it's called Three Mics. I love this concept. He puts three stand-up microphones on a stage. He then, one of them is for your traditional stand-up. So Neil Brennan will do his act. And then he'll stop and he'll move over to another microphone, which is where he tells one-liners. When I saw him do it on Meltdown, he did it with the right out of a book, like even writing them down, like little one-liners he's working on. And then the third mic is for emotional stuff. It's for his real life. It's not intended to be funny. And so he rotates throughout the 1.5-hour show from each one of these microphones, and he weaves a very creative sort of constant, you know, flow of material that you know, can sort of vacillates from, you know, standard traditional stand-up to, you know, I'm depressed. And it works. And it's got rave reviews in New York. He was doing it off-Broadway there, and he is touring it now. And it's coming to Talia Hall coming up later this month. So we'll talk with Neil Brennan tonight. Also coming up, we got a fan jam the Olympics. I've been watching the Cubs game. I haven't even watched any of the Olympics. That's why we have Molly. Molly Green's going to do it after 9:30. She's going to give us an update. I was watching beach volleyball, the women's team, and I didn't see if they won or not. I'm going to switch it back. It's already over. I screwed it up. Someone can tell me. But it looks like it was cold in Rio because they were wearing long sleeve tops, but still bikini bottoms. But the team they were playing, I think the Swedes might have been, I think it was Swedish. They went pants, long sleeve tops. Pants.
Yeah. It's not right.
Well, you know, again, it makes me go, wait, I thought this was a uniform. Now I'm seeing this as a choice. Molly kind of talked about that a little bit at the top. Like, no, you know, teams can essentially wear whatever they want when they're playing beach volleyball.
Yeah, I thought it was they choose this because it helps them perform better.
You know, the fresh air on their buttocks.
Well, you know, like these athletes, they're...
It's like the two caps in swimming.
Right, exactly. The one cap... There's wrinkles in the one cap, so they put the second cap over it.
It's so dumb. Or, you know what I think they need to do in swimming? Is be able to have some sort of waterproof earphones so they can listen to music while they swim. I'm an inventor at heart. You know, I come up with new innovations for sport. That's one that I think for swimming, why couldn't you just have, like, if they could do waterproof and you were able to, like, Wi-Fi and be able to play your Eminem song when you swim?
I think that would be distracting. I think that they're so focused.
Not for me. I would need, like, a Fat Boy Slim track right here, right now.
To get you going?
Praise me like I should. It's like, swim. I'm swimming harder, swimming beat. I get into a beat. I get fast. Playing my EDM. Here comes the beat. Ah!
Gold medal.
Gold medal.
Have you swam? I know we were talking about this with Bob because Bob Kessler, you know, newsman. He swims.
I don't swim. I have contacts. When I wear contacts and I get in the pool, it takes about 5 seconds of sloshing around to be like, stop. Hold on. I need a break. I want to be a swimmer, and I wear goggles, I guess, but it never works.
Yeah, because we haven't gone in a while, but we used to go quite a bit to the Chase Park up in up near us and swim. They have a lap swim. It's always annoying because
you go when the kids go.
Well, no, we actually try.
Well, you're adult.
Well,
adult
yeah,
swim.
Yeah, and you pay for that. You have to pay for the you pay like $30 a quarter for the lap swim to avoid the kids and the people sloshing around.
As it should be. If you want to get a good swim in, you got to pay. That's America.
I guess so. Yep. And it's hard. Like, you're trying to do just one lap.
It's so hard.
When I watch these guys, it's amazing. And I saw a funny tweet. I can't even remember who tweeted it, but it was like they should, the Olympics should allow one slot for just a regular guy. So you can see how by comparison, how fast these guys are going.
I had an idea. I wanted to do this. It's never going to happen. The production and the coordination and the humility that would be needed for this video. I thought it would be funny to go to like the East Bank Club or go to one of these pools, right? And have talk show hosts swim like in a meet, like it's the Olympic, 400 or whatever, like relay, but it was different radio stations. Like you actually got like different personalities to, and you shoot it where you go across and it's like their name. So it says like Steve Dahl, world champions 2014.
That'd be great.
But I was like, that would be great. I started thinking about it. By the time we would actually be able to produce it, if I could get any of those people to do it, it would be September, and we'd be like, remember the Olympics? Do you remember the Olympics? So I don't think it would work. But I think it'd be really funny. But the only way it would be funny is if everybody was cool with wearing a Speedo. I'm cool with wearing a Speedo. I think that's the fun. I understand the value.
It's part of the bit.
The comedic value of my body. I say that as a bit, but I really do. I understand it. That's something that I've been able to do on stage. I am a hairy, funny-looking guy, and I can use that to my advantage. So I didn't do a good job, though, sort of articulating that idea quick enough.
I think we can
get it done?
Yeah.
Like Rokan, Steve Cochran, Nick DiGiulio.
Yes.
Justin Kaufman. Patty Vasquez.
I love it.
Amy Guth. And then we all just – and then the funny thing is – but it'd be really hard to do because of the – because of the angles and stuff, but it'd be really funny to actually race, go from one end to the back and just see how bad of swimmers we are.
Let's pitch it, because we have a wonderful video department here, Kristen and Shanae. They do amazing video work. They would love it. I'm not sure about getting the other guys in the pool, but right. I think there's enough people here.
That we could just do it a GN thing.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my next guest is coming to Talia Hall on August 19th. Stand-up comedian and television writer and producer Neil Brennan is fresh off an off-Broadway run of his new show, Three Mics. It's a show that has Brennan on stage with three mics, one for one-liners, one for stand-up, and one for emotional realness. Brennan is a tremendous talent. He's best known for co-creating Chappelle's Show with Dave Chappelle on Comedy Central, but also for his work in stand-up and writing jokes for the Oscars, for the White House Correspondents' Dinners, and other high-profile events. Brennan actually grew up in the Chicago area, spending a good portion of his childhood in the town of Wilmette. Neil Brennan, welcome to the Download.
Thank you for having me. You had me from tremendous talent. I was really zoning you out. Then I heard tremendous talent and high-profile events, and Neil, wake up and pay attention. It's go time.
You still have family in Chicago? I mean, when you come through to do a show, do you go back and visit the old homestead?
A lot of comps. there's no homestead left. It was in Wilmette, and Wilmette's too far away to visit, because it's not like they're there.
Yeah, right.
They all moved downtown. So, yeah, but I'll stay at my sister's house or one of my sister's houses.
You obviously, you spent some time here as a child, but most of your formal years in stand-up were done in New York City. Talk about getting involved in stand-up and what drew you to that art form as a teenager.
Well, I was always, my brother was a comedian. So when I was in high school, I used to go visit him in New York. And so I used to watch him sort of become a comedian. And his peers, guys that he spent every night with, were like Dave Attell and Ray Romano and Jon Stewart and Louis C.K. And these are guys that I've known since I was in high school. So then I moved up here to go to NYU Film School in New York. and ended up working at a comedy club, just working the door at the same time, and ended up dropping out because I just didn't like film school, and I didn't like film students, more specifically, if I could directly crap on them. So then I started working the door at the club full time. By full time, I mean like 22 hours a week. And then just sort of started writing jokes for guys that were around, and like Chappelle was one of the guys. And so, I've just been, I guess I'm like a club rat.
That's
There's
good.
Such a thing as gym rats.
Yeah, right.
In basketball, I consider myself a club rat. Like there, even when I'm not doing stand up, I like watching it. I like thinking about it. I just like it.
Well, I read that, you know, you got up on stage. It didn't go so well when you first started.
When I was like 18. Yeah. I got up on stage when I was 18, then 23. Then I did it when I was 23. Then me and Chappelle wrote Half Baked. And I was like, let me just be a writer.
Right.
And then slowly but surely it would gnaw at me. And then I started back up at 33, which is not the way you want to do it. You want to start in your early 20s. But thankfully, my face has been cooperative and not a ton of wrinkles, so I can trick people.
You can trick
into
people.
Thinking I'm young and relevant.
Well, you've had success with stand-up.
Even though I'm 58. No, I'm kidding.
You've had success with stand-up, but the show that you're doing now, Three Mics, it really is a mixture of obvious, you know, stand-up, one performer on stage. But with the Three Mics, it really is something that is playing more to theater crowds. To what you did in New York was an off-Broadway show. Talk about that transition, the idea of this idea, Three Mics, and going from the comedy club to the theater stage.
It was, well, the thing with that, the impetus for it was... Do you know what impetus means? Anyhow, the impetus for it was, I'd done a Comedy Central hour. I'd done a half an hour and I'd done an hour. And I was like pretty kind of popular. And I was like, you know, I got to do something else because there's so many specials now. Everyone has an hour. And so I just wanted to figure out a way to talk about other stuff or just be like different than everybody else. And I knew from doing podcasts, particularly Joe Rogan's podcast, I would do it. And when I talked about real stuff like depression or other stuff like that, like realer issues, people really responded to it. And I'd still be funny, but it's not like that sort of rapid fire joke, every laugh every 8 seconds thing.
Right.
It's probably more like every 30. So it's, when I say dramatic, it's not, I guess it's dramatic. It's just more like raw honesty, I guess. It's like, I guess it's stuff that you wouldn't want people to know about you. That was sort of my impulse for like, what should I talk about? Stuff that like, so depression in a comedian is like, everyone knows, hey, comedians are generally depressed, and they sort of keep it like this thing of like, hey, tears of a clown, all that stuff. But like, I just wanted to talk about like, what is it actually like? And what's my experience with it been like? It's not even especially dour or depressing, that part of the show. It's just more like honest and like forthcoming. So that's more what I'm going for than dramatic. The last story is pretty dramatic.
Well, my father
dying.
Yeah. I hate to cut you off on that. Sorry.
No. The way you just said, it was pretty great. I was like, my father dying. And you were like, it's pretty sad. Yeah, really. Don't bring it down. People are pulling over right now.
Well, there is something. I mean, let me ask you about.
Yeah, dude. People, fathers die, dude. Like, it's a real thing. Fathers die every day. Someone's got to talk about it.
For you to do the show, and I saw the original concept on Meltdown, which was great. And I remember at the time being like, this is really brilliant, the concept, because there is this moment where you get real in the middle mic or whichever mic it is. And you're still giggling. You're still laughing because of the concept of you switching microphones. So it's even as real as you're getting, the audience is still almost taking it as a comedy bit. How do you do that to avoid it just being a gimmick or avoid
in
it being...
Meltdown, it was so truncated that they definitely, like at first they thought it was a comedy bit. There have been shows where people didn't really know what they were getting themselves into. And when I started talking about depression, that's the first sort of more serious monologue. People were still going like, woo! I was like, all right, man. Maybe don't woo. It's not quite the wooing section. So there are people that, when they don't know what they're getting themselves into, think it's going to be... There was a point where I said, like, when I used to explain what each mic was for, and then Chappelle saw the show, and he was like, you know, it's more fun trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But I used to say, like, Mike, this Mike is not, it's not going to be Adam Devine's house party. It's funny, but it's not like a raucous, you know, beer guzzling party time. So shout out to Adam Devine. And so, yeah, so I think people figured it out. Like, you get used to, and what's interesting is by the end of the show, people want to hear the middle mic more than either of the other two.
Of course,
that's
yeah.
You really get a sense of who I am. Because you can't really, you know, in stand-up, you get a sense of, like, someone's spirit, kind of, but you don't really know what they're like. Like, you don't really know, like, what is Jim Jeffries really, what's Bill Burr really like? Like, what's, you know, Pryor is about the only one who would go more serious. And I'm sure you're wondering, Neil, are you actually comparing yourself to Richard Pryor? And I'm saying, I absolutely am. No, I'm kidding. No, but like everybody else, you just go like, my dad's deaf. And then you just talk about your dad, whatever. Like, you talk about the problem in a very, very surfacey, glib way,
right.
for the most part.
I mean, putting it on stage, it's got to help in the sense that people are really kind of looking at it more through a theatrical lens as opposed to the comedy club where you have to do, if you're going to talk about depressing things or your depression, it almost has to be in stand-up form.
Cannot be done at Up or the Laugh Factory or any of the clubs in Chicago or Zany's, like, because, like, part of the show is about alcoholism. So, like, I kind of, having people hammered is just not, like, cool. Like, they won't have fun, and I'll be bummed out if they're, like, sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that sort of goes against the sponsor's wishes at a comedy club.
Right.
Kind of not what they have to drink at a comedy club. I think in Chicago, the city has a two-drink minimum, right?
I think as a city, yeah.
Yeah, like, every day you have to have two drinks. So that's sort of the figuring out, like, that's why I didn't do it at a club and I did it in New York at a theater.
Neil Brennan is our guest tonight. He's a stand-up comedian. His show Three Mics is coming to Talia Hall on August 19th. You know, you've had a career in television as well with Chappelle's Show, obviously being the mm-hmm. co-creator and director of some of the episodes. And it's interesting because I read somewhere that, you know, you've had a lot of options to get back into television. You're a very sought-after producer
television. I'm calling you from The Daily Show right now.
Are you really?
I directed the first season of Schumer Show. If I am friends with people, I will work with them. Before she was popular, she said, would you do the show? And I was like, we were friends. I was like, absolutely. Trevor has been started this show. He wanted me to work on it full time originally. And I was like, I'll 1 week a month. So I work on that. I work on The Daily Show 1 week a month. I just started like last 3 weeks ago or something.
I mean, it's great. I mean, that's relationships and that's awesome to have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
What keeps you from taking on another role, like a showrunner's role? Is it just the idea of time and energy that has to be put into something?
It takes a long, it's time. It's like, it becomes your life. You know, if you're the showrunner of a show, you're basically the Secretary of State, and it's very stressful. It's just, it's more stress than I like. My situation right now, The Daily Show is great because it's like I work 1 week a month. I have some ownership and it's really fun. And I like everybody here. Everybody's really funny. And so that's fun. And there's just not as much pressure and not as much drag. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to do this again next week. And then the rest of the time, I just do stand up and direct commercials and write. You know, I'm writing, I think, and the other thing is I do it, I write a pilot every year for myself. They just never get picked up.
Really? I find that hard to believe. I mean, people clamoring
if
for you.
If you think it's hard to believe, how do you think I feel? like they just, whatever, but I've done someone could have gotten picked up. They just, you know, I got to get more popular as a comedian before they like feel forced. So hopefully this Talia Hall, the Hall show, I think this is going to be the one.
Yeah. You obviously also involved in podcasts. I mean, The Champs was a great podcast that just wrapped up this year. You are very comfortable and it seems to be an easy space for you. Just talking about issues and being yourself in the space. You and Moshe Kasher are great at it. Talk about that podcast specifically, because even I was just listening today, just re-listening to the final episode about the fact that it's hard to get people to do other people's podcasts, but also it's a lot of white dudes talking to white dudes. And what The Champs would do is bring people of color on the show.
Most podcasts are it's white on white crime. It's just white people talking to the same white people. So the premise of the Champs was we would try to, I would just book black dudes like that. It was almost exclusively black dudes, or at least not white people, not white women or men. So that we included, we opened it up to Middle Eastern, Latino, and Asian. But the original premise was black dudes, largely because I have no one was talking to these guys. No one had their numbers, was the truth. Mark Maron and Rogan and these guys didn't have very many numbers. So I was friends with all these guys from just being around stand-up, and I would do black shows and stuff. So, and they were predisposed to trust me or like me because of Chappelle's show. So I just knew a lot of guys, and we were able to get guys to come on and be honest in a way that they weren't often. Questlove, who was like a Champs aficionado and was on the last episode, said it was like one of the only places black dudes could come and be emotional, because like there is more of that in like the, but now there's something of a black podcast community, but when we started 5-6 years ago, there was none. So yeah, if you want to hear me talking to black dudes, download the Champs. It's on iTunes.
With doing the Daily Show once a month or 1 week a month, and doing some other stuff, doing a show, three mics, do you see yourself having a future in podcasts, like launching some other stuff and continuing that
career? I have another idea for one. I literally just have to. The worst part about doing a podcast is you have to book people, and I have to ask my friends to, like, inconvenience themselves. So that's the drag of it. Like with the Champs, I found myself, I was directing a commercial, a Nike commercial, and like Richard Sherman was in it. And I was like, can you do my podcast? I just felt like a goofball. I'm like, hey, mister, I'm 40. Would you mind doing my podcast? I just felt like an idiot. So there was a pride, not even pride, just like, I just didn't want to do it to them. Because they kind of could, some people couldn't pass. They just felt too awkward to pass, which is never, I just don't want to put people in that position. Hopefully, I have an idea. Hopefully, I can do it through somewhere where they can book people for me.
There you go. You need producers, right?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Neil Brennan.
I need a Neil Brennan.
No, you need a Neil Brennan. You do. You can find that guy. I heard he only works one week a month.
I know. These Neil Brennans are lazy.
Neil Brennan's coming to the Talia Hall on August 19th. His show is Three Mics, the co-creator of Chappelle's Show and Comedy Central and stand-up comedian. Neil Brennan, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I had fun doing it.
This morning on WGN Morning News, and they did this yesterday too, they're showing a montage that's on YouTube of just some guy put together all the 80s movies, the dance scenes from all the 80s movies, and to Dancing on the Ceiling by Lionel Richie. It's hysterical. And it's also, like we talked about last night, why it's the best show on TV. They just played it. Like, they even kept some of the commentary down. So just played as part of the morning news, as part of the 9 o'clock newscast. 2 minutes of a montage of 80s dance movies. There's a lot of movies I got to re-see. You know, I feel like that's the perfect generation to show 9-year-olds. You know, like all those movies, right? All those movies. Every one of those 1980s, everything from Ghostbusters to Weird Science to Better Off Dead, One Crazy Summer. We got lucky. I went to One Crazy Summer and watched a trailer. It's a funny trailer because it's all Bobcat Goldthwait, like being like, hey, welcome to the trailer. Like, it's kind of like a little bit of a meta trailer, right? And so I'm like, well, that was a comic in the 80s. There's, you know, like, there's nothing wrong. Oh, that's just his voice. And then Bobcat showed up on an episode of Bob's Burgers. You know, he played like a guest star. I'm like, yes, see? That's the same guy just 25 years later. It's like, exactly. So maybe there's something there, you know, as we try to figure that out. So I've got a lot of, I feel like this is my weekend. I'm going to hit up like at least two 80s movies. My wife was like, Better Off Dead. And I was like, Better Off Dead. That's great. And I went to look for it, and I couldn't find it on Amazon. Couldn't find it on Netflix. Couldn't find it on
Comcast.
Really?
Yeah, they're just, it's like out of rotation. It's like, that's what the, I thought that I paid all this money so I could have everything at my disposal. I thought that was the contract, but I guess that's not, because some movies are never there. And this is one of them.
You still have your Laserdisc player? I think I may have that on Laserdisc.
I really need to dust that one off. The lasers may need to be recalibrated. Thank you, Veronica Carter. We need a remix. We need a Wyclef remix on this track. You know, like, you could say someone put a beat into this and it's like, dum 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 dum, you know, something like that. I don't know. I feel like that could be like a 2016 version.
They're out there.
I was
researching. You put in like Olympics theme remix, and about 9,000 things come up. And I was listening to, and I like the classic.
Yeah, you know, I think we should play whatever Thiago Pinheiro, the Brazilian swimmer, is listening to in his headphones. I'm watching right now, and he's got a nice little swagger to him.
Probably some alt country.
I like the classic, but I want like an Adam Hoge style little ditty.
Yeah, right, exactly. Molly Green joins us now to fan jam the Olympics. Hi, Molly, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
All right, so this is a big time to be talking to you because we are like ready
the
to watch
of the night.
Something. And what are we about to watch here?
Well, it's a semifinal, so I know how you feel about semifinals.
I hate semifinals.
But it's the Phelps-Lochte event. So
what does that mean? What does that mean?
It's the event that they're going up against each other, and they're in the same semifinal, so they're coming out right now, and. So this is kind of, you know, a historic rivalry, the Federer and Nadal of tennis. I mean, of swimming, and so this is kind of their last hurrah.
So was Lochte and you know, I lose track of my Olympic sort of trivia or history here, but Ryan Lochte, does he race in the usual same things that Michael Phelps, and he was like the silver medalist or the bronze medalist to Phelps gold?
Well, it's not every event, but this event is the one that Phelps has been in the Olympics since 2000. Lochte's been in the Olympics since 2004. So this is the event that they are, like, last night they were teammates, and tonight they are rivals.
Oh.
But NBC is so into the rivals thing, and I kind of like when, like, in the last race, it was really nice to see everyone congratulating each other. Mm-hmm. Am I lame for being more into that than the rifle?
No,
I don't
there was
know.
No
I like
finger
that. That's
wagging.
The Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like when people are nice to each other.
Well, I saw an article, and I love all the thought pieces that will come out now that are all about, you know, what we see. But there was this sort of creating a false narrative of athletes having rivalries against each other, really kind of played on by the American and the Russian swimmers who were doing the finger wagging. But
right.
This idea that most of the time this is a pretty tight-knit community, and they're not – it's not like NFL football. It's not the Bengals and Steelers.
And like I was saying the other night, a lot of them train together anyway, even if they're from different countries. But they're really into showing the ready room where the infamous Phelps mean face happened. So they're just like – they want that to happen again so bad. Like last night they were split screening while a final was going on. They were showing Michael Phelps in the ready room. Like
no respect.
Yeah.
Now this is a medley. This is a 200 medley. So this essentially means that they have to swim a different way. Can I ask you, is there any, do they get sort of an all swim, sort of swim however you like category in this one?
That doesn't, where you just choose your own.
Yeah, choose your own, like the last one. You can swim however you like.
Is there, you know, how like do they do exhibitions in swimming? You know how like with the figure skating, how the last night they'll do, someone will do like flips
on
the ice, and they'll do the exhibition.
Yeah,
maybe they do that with swimming.
Or like when they get professional and there's a little bit more like the one where they're like, ooh, look at these costumes. That's my favorite, when the ice skating goes to professional and they're like, look at this. This is so extravaganza. Look at this. They don't get to do that in swimming as much.
No. And tonight's been, there's Katie Ledecky is still going to swim for a medal, but it's been a lot of semifinals tonight. There's been a lot of butts again tonight on the Olympics.
Really? Like a lot of beach volleyball and that kind of thing?
A lot of beach volleyball.
What I don't understand is a semifinal in this sport. Okay, so Michael Phelps finishes first. Ryan Lochte finishes second. And my Brazilian swag master finishes third. So that's good. This is a semifinal, though, so it doesn't really matter.
You must be... Your feed is somehow like a couple of seconds before mine, because
mine's
really? Still swimming on mine.
Wow, so I just spoiled it for you.
It's all right.
That's good. It must be the power of the Trib Tower, right? Like, we must have, like, Colonel McCormick was able to make some moves to get us the feed. There's no dump button on this swimming match.
I tell you what.
Dwyer's grandfather has something to
right,
do with
exactly.
it.
I'll give you a 6-inch TV, but you can see everything a second ahead of time.
So, all right. So tonight, what I find interesting is, you know, we were kind of getting in trouble last night because the women's gymnastic all around happened during the day and they held it till primetime. So essentially we're saying that semifinal swim meet and meaningless beach volleyball beats gold medal matches and other things that are being shown during the day. That's what I don't understand. I guess they must know better than us that everybody just wants to see bodies in water.
Well, I was reading, I feel like this is the theme of this Olympics is complaining. Like, I just keep seeing things about people complaining about stuff. And people are annoyed with NBC's control over, like, okay, so NBC wants beach volleyball at night, and they want swimming at night. Like, they are dictating.
Oh,
that.
Interesting. Okay.
But somehow they don't have the power over the gymnastics, and so people are annoyed that they're... So it's one thing to, like, show it at night and it's delayed. Fine. But they're not even showing it live. I mean, you could... I guess you can watch it on the stream.
But you're right. I mean, I don't understand why... I mean, just as someone... And again, they would know better because they have all the ratings and things, but it seems like women's gymnastics... would be a prime time event, the one that everybody would want to see across the world. I mean, that seems to be a sport that everybody's into, and that swimming could take could be something that you could hold on to. But I guess that's the power of Michael Phelps, right?
And then the way like the prime time works, it's that NBC has for years now, for Olympics now, has been trying to create like a story, a narrative with the primetime coverage. But now people want just like instantly, they want to be able to see it, and they want, so whereas the viewers' focus has shifted towards wanting to know what's going on live, NBC is still holding on to this idea that you want like kind of the story of a building.
They got to get rid of that. I like the live. I will say this. Now I remember Ryan Lochte a little bit more because he was kind of the dumb swimmer from like last Olympics,
he's a lovable dope.
Yeah. Why did he dye his hair? Has he talked about it at all? Why he dyed his hair to a weird blonde?
I don't know, but it seems like a very Ryan Lochte thing to do, that he thinks that's cool. I don't know. He's really, he just kind of seems dumb and like easy to, I don't know, that he would think like,
he's
a
good athlete.
Cool,
I mean, he could do it, right.
But he's amazing and, I'm amazed by being 32, the training and
the hair and the whole bit.
All
right, so tonight, the moments obviously are swimming, but what were the shining moments of the Olympics tonight?
Well, Nathan Adrian swam for a medal and he got a bronze.
Okay.
But my favorite like moment of tonight or today is that NBC took photos of Olympians with puppies, and the one with Nathan Adrian was making its rounds today. And so Nathan Adrian's kind of like the cutest swimmer, the hunkiest swimmer. And so the picture of him with a puppy was what was that reflects my personal social media feed.
So that would also be your best broadcast moment tonight?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that stands out to me the most.
What have been the primetime, I mean, it was beach volleyball. I kind of checked in at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
But then
it
it's just
tight.
Been swimming after that?
Yeah, so they started out with beach volleyball, and I was kind of like, it's a little bit boring because the matches haven't been that close. And, you know, like we talked about Kerry Walsh Jennings, even like when I've been like working out this week, I've been like channeling my inner Kerry Walsh Jennings. it is inspiring, but I don't know, it's a little bit boring. But tonight they played a Swiss team, and they lost the set.
With pants.
The Swiss team won the second.
They had pants on.
The Swiss team had pants on, but we did not. We just had sleeves on.
Yeah, so I was of the, I guess, the the notion that you were that was uniformed, but I guess it's not. I mean, we kind of talked about one of the Middle Eastern countries was covered, and then right. In this case, they could wear pants. But so it's a choice that the Americans are making. A lot of teams are making to wear the bikini.
My other question about beach volleyball is that, okay, so they have cheerleaders and they have like a DJ, like that's always been the thing with beach volleyball.
Red Bull.
The music is all like American jock jams, no matter where, what country it is. So that's my question is
why
isn't it why isn't it Brazilian pop?
Right, and they're playing. Are they playing like "Let Me See That Tootsie Roll"? Like, what are they doing?
That hand clap song.
Yeah, right,
you know what I'm talking about.
Let me see you
Beyonce
clap your hands.
And, yeah.
Is it like basketball, where it's like between every single ball that gets brought in, they have to place like 10 seconds of a
going? Yeah.
Are they playing Nelly? Is there a lot of "It's Hot in Here"? Yeah,
maybe.
That's hilarious.
It's that kind of thing.
poor Chinese volleyball players who are just like, what is this? Why am I going to hear Nelly every time I go to the Olympics?
Yeah. I was watching men's beach volleyball this morning, and the American team that was playing lost. And one of the guys got really annoyed with the team that won for, like, poor sportsmanship because they were, like, celebrating too much and getting, like, too pumped up about it. And he just, like, walked off the court. But I feel like that's the environment of it, is that – being pumped up.
Is this what you do all day long, Molly? Is it just all Olympics?
Well, I was trying. I was watching in the morning, and I was trying to have it on while I was at work, and I was having trouble streaming it. I don't know if anybody else is too, but I was really trying and having trouble getting the stream.
What do they show? What are the things during the day they're showing? I mean, I kind of made the joke that I've seen so much whitewater rowing that I'm done with it, but what are they showing during the day?
Well, I was trying to watch Nadal play tennis, but actually the tennis was it was rained out today. There was an American cyclist who's 43, won gold. She's won gold a bunch of times. So she was – that was during the day. Actually, like, men's gymnastics was during the day. The women's volleyball, the women's basketball teams were playing today who are really good.
Okay.
As well as, like, you know, there's like equestrian things. And
yeah, when is the, do we have any idea when dressage takes place? I mean, I saw it a little bit early, but do we have any updates on the dressage team for the United States?
Well, there was an American that won like a bronze in dressage, and I think he's from
the area,
the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I take somewhat of credit for that, for talking about dressage, and I just got everyone pumped up. I probably got that guy pumped up. Because he was listening, and he's like, I got to do this for my country now. Like, he was thinking, I'm okay with being an eighth or ninth. And then he heard the segment. He's like, wow, these people are talking about me. I got to get up to at least third place. All right.
The other thing that happened during the day today, Pete's going to enjoy this, is that a weightlifter dislocated his elbow.
Ooh, was it gross?
It was gross, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we like to see. I mean, I know that that's not showing too much Olympic, you know, sort of pride of the idea, but I do like it when I see the athletes go down.
Oh yeah, it was like, if you saw the pictures of like the French gymnast, this was like the elbow version of that, where his elbow is going one way and the rest of his arm is going.
It's like the old SNL all drugs Olympics where the guys doing
like
the weightlifting
and
they pull their arms off.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah.
All right. So a good and a successful night today. We're coming up next. Katie Ledecky's going to swim. Always a highlight for the Olympics because she seems to dominate. We already saw Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte go to a first and second in the semifinal. So they'll race, what, tomorrow for the gold?
Right.
They'll give them one. And I didn't see too many cupping marks, so maybe they're just dialing that down a little bit.
Or they're getting used to it.
Oh, right.
It's fading.
All right. Well, Molly, you got to come back tomorrow night. Give us an update here. Molly is fan jamming the Olympics for us. Katie Ledecky coming up next. Molly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Justin.
I can't hear my headphones. I can't hear my left headphones. What's up? It's DJ Bustin' Justin. Olympics coming to you. Gold, silver, bronze. All the medals. This one's for my shorty.
You got to have the remix, the Olympic remix. It's so obvious, right? This is like, that's a perfect track for like a Shakira hook. You know, like, I got to win all the medals. That kind of thing with like a Wyclef jam. All right, coming up 10 o'clock picnic tonight, John Lester. Great left-handed pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. And his catcher, David Ross. This is David Ross's final year. And John Lester, of course, only pitches when David Ross catches. So essentially two, you know, like David will be gone. I don't know who Lester's going to throw to. He better. Someone actually just put on text, I hate your nicknames. I hope they haven't caught on. Are you kidding me? How could you hate Freeze Frame for Miguel Montero or Big Country? I thought Big Country was perfect for John Lackey. During this next hour, we'll read off all the ones we've come up with because I think it's 20 plus now. We've been doing Picnic, which is giving an authentic, legitimate nickname to all the 2016 Chicago Cubs because we know this is a team of destiny and you don't want to look back after they win and be like, John? We're going to call John Lester John? That's boring. And also we want to be, you know, you want to be the smart guy in the section when you're at Wrigley and you're like, come on, Big Country. And they're like, I want to be cool like this guy. I want to sit by this guy. 312-981-7200 is the number. You can text and you can call for John Lester and David Ross. We'll do that after the 10 o'clock news with Veronica Carter. All right. So, yeah. So with the Olympics, I'm excited. I'm glad that Molly does that. That's really great for us. Because otherwise, I feel like I would have no concept of what's happening. And I guess we're stumbled onto something that we should have her do more daytime stuff because there might be some interesting thing. Like, I didn't know the American cyclist was 43 years old and she won, you know. And I'm still super confused about what is okay and what's off limits to talk about because of the way that the time shifting stuff that NBC has done with the primetime schedule. And I know a lot of people who are listening because the text came in too are frustrated with it too. Because there's no rule. Like when it was in Beijing, there was a little bit of a rule. NBC and even the news medias would be like, spoiler alert, or at least, hey, this got done. I know you're not going to see it for 6 hours, right? Because there was a huge time change. You know, the time zone was so different.
Yeah, even in like social media and tweets, instead of saying Ryan Lochte wins or whomever whatever, they would say, you know, like find out who won.
Right.
If you want to find out who won, click here.
And that was acceptable. We all played, but there's no rule for this year because Rio is 2 hours, what, up?
Yeah.
So it's like it's a little bit more than New York.
Yep.
And it's annoying. It's just annoying because no one is. Yeah, they're not following that rule at all. U.S. wins gold. Gymnasts, you know, women gymnastics gold. And they're like, oh, and then you're like, OK, well, I guess, you know, that's fair game. And then NBC like waits until to put that on until 10. We didn't show the second half of that till after 10 o'clock last night. So they're even in on this. They're complicit, too, because they know that everybody's seen it. They're like, well, if you just want to see what happened, here it is. Because if they were actually playing the game of, like, we're going to time shift this and, like, try to give it to people who don't know, then they wouldn't do what they did last night, which was total absurdity. The idea that they started at 7 o'clock, everyone was mad, even at us, because we were giving it away. They didn't even show the full thing. They went to swimming at 8 o'clock, and then they didn't go back to the gymnastics to get the actual gold until after 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I'm with the texter who said, I'm going to find it here. I long for the Olympics of yesterday's when Russian weightlifters tossed around 500 kilos like it was firewood.
Do they still do?
I don't think they do that.
Weightlifting is
maybe
not a thing?
Maybe they do. Yeah, that's a good point. We should have Molly back on. We should have her investigate. Because maybe that's more with the next level. Like the next week you'll start doing the track and field. Does weightlifting get into track and field? Probably. Like that part? You know, this is when, like, yeah, like, I feel like that. So there's, like, two parts of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Swimming will end, and then it's running.
Yeah, they were talking to one of the swimmers this morning I was watching, and he was excited because he was done They have another week and a half of enjoying.
Oh man, that's
Rio.
Party city.
Yeah,
that's where Zika becomes trouble.
Yeah,
that's when they're like, "Hey, you want to go? Let's go. Let's go out to the trails."
Yep.
Yeah. Right now they're like going from building to building. They're just pretty much living in that staging area. Then they get done. They got 2 weeks to themselves. I'm like, have you ever climbed a tree? Let's see what's up there.
Have you ever met an Olympian or touched a gold medal or anything like that?
I thought you could say, have I ever touched an Olympian? No. I feel like Northwestern has Olympians in training. A lot of swimmers come out of Northwestern. Connor Dwyer may have, because they have like Olympic like standard type equipment stuff at the school. And I believe when I was working somewhere else, I did a story there, so I probably worked or like, you know, interviewed. I don't remember any of the swimmers, but I interviewed a lot of young swimmers who were like, you know, my hope is to be in 2012 to be here and be there. I'm gonna dye my hair. I'm gonna look really great. So I don't know. Have you?
Yeah, it's just in, you know, being involved in radio. You know, I met, you know, whatever the bobsled team or, you know, people from the various Olympics that would roll through a radio station and bring their medal.
They're on the bobsled tour.
Get a picture of myself with a gold medal. Wearing their gold medal.
Right.
Do you mind coming? Like, I'm like Trump with the purple heart. Yeah. You know?
I've always wanted one of these. No, it's so easy. That would be good to meet an Olympic. I'm trying to think. Like, it would be great. I feel like maybe I met Greg Louganis because he came around on book tours, didn't he? Like, he did. Like, he wrote a ton of books after his thing. So maybe, like, you don't really meet him. You just, being a radio station, you get to maybe shake his hand and ask him if you want some water. Trying to think, like, other, like, Carl Lewis I never met, but.
But I would imagine that a lot of these Olympians that are from the area, Connor Dwyer.
They got to come back through.
They'll probably come back through and bring, I'm sure Cochran already probably has them booked and stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, like that'd be great. I'd love to sit down with a swimmer or at least any of these athletes, even the ones that don't necessarily win gold.
We did dressage.
Yeah, right. We did, yeah. I mean, look what we did for dressage. We did that.
You got to believe in this love. You got to believe in the Chicago Cubs. You got to believe in the American dream. You got to believe.
I just had a thought. I had a thought in my head that this was you, Pete, in the basement. Like, you were actually recording this. You're like, I need to come up with a new anthem for this season. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. In studio with me, Matt Klein. Good to see you, Matt.
Hello, hello.
All right, Esmeralda's here as well. Veronica's going to play at some point this hour as well, because what we're going to do tonight is what we do every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. It is time for Picnic. That's right. We are giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to each and every member of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Dexter Fowler, Free Range. What do we have for Jason Hayward? I was going to go around the, do we have Hayward?
Let me look at my list.
All right.
I have no recollection of
I know Hayward. That's the problem with doing this.
Haymaker.
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 Okay. We've got Ben Zobrist, who is Zorro. We've got Addison Russell, which is Smooth Criminal. Addison Russell, Smooth Criminal. Somewhere in there that made sense. Chris Bryant is Roy. For Rookie of the Year, but also Roy Hobbs. Catcher Miguel Montero is Freeze Frame. John Lackey, of course, Big Country. Tonight, Jason Hamill, Ham Jam, threw a nice game for the win for the Cubs. The Calculator is a Cy Young candidate, Kyle Hendricks. I mean, we are pretty much almost out of players. We still have left Jake Arrieta. We have Anthony Rizzo. Jorge Soler, who's back. Aroldis Chapman, who just joined the team. Essentially the bullpen for the Chicago Cubs. And tonight's choice, John Lester, the left-handed World Series winner. The Boston Red Sox brought here to bring a championship to be pitching in the World Series. John Lester and his catcher, David Ross. So those are the two to pick tonight. We got prizes to give away. We're going to give away a Pequod's Pizza gift card to both. Whoever comes up with the winning nicknames for both John Lester and David Ross. Matt Klein, what do we know about John Lester.
Let me tell you about John Lester. John Lester is a 32-year-old pitcher. He's a four-time All-Star. He's pitched for the Boston Red Sox, the Oakland A's, and the Cubs now. He's currently 12-4 through 22 starts with a 2.93 ERA. We acquired him as a free agent on December 15th of 2014. He signed a six-year, $155 million contract. He's from Tacoma, Washington. He's from Bellarmine Prep in Tacoma. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But it's Bellarmine Prep. They're the Lions. Also, it's where potential becomes purpose. Bellarmine Prep. That's their tagline. He was the Gatorade State Player of the Year in 2000. He's a lymphoma survivor.
Really? That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Early on in his career, he diagnosed with that. He took people saying his career was over, and he fought back.
He fought back. He's he's a lymphoma survivor. This is crazy. He's an avid hunter and also at the same time a wine aficionado.
Really?
Yes. So he somehow has managed to squeeze both of those.
John Lester.
John Lester is
an aficionado.
Wine aficionado. He actually has a charity wine that he's putting out. This is no joke. A charity wine he's putting out called Cabernet Ace.
Classy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So. And let's see here. What else we know about John Lester? He relies heavily on a mid to low 90s four-seam fastball and a cutter that's usually right around 90 miles an hour.
And he is known to not have – he's bald. He does not have hair.
He's bald. He has no hair.
And he also, which is the strangest thing, cannot throw to first base.
He has the worst – pickoff move to first base in arguably the history of baseball.
For whatever reason, it's like a psychological block.
It's a psychological block.
He can't throw the ball to first base.
Whether it's a pickoff move from the mound or fielding a ball, he has a serious issue throwing to first base.
What is
– I don't know what it
is. Pete, can you shed light on that? I mean, is that just like – is that sort of going back to Chuck Knobloch? And how he couldn't throw to second base for a while, like
yips.
Yeah, is that what is it about? But John Lester is a guy who, you know, throws with pinpoint accuracy to home plate. So it's not a yips thing, right? It's not like a Knobloch where he's just kind of can't do his job,
right?
What is it? Do you know from watching John Lester what his problem is at throwing to first base?
No, maybe, I don't know, maybe just too focused on the hitters. I mean, he's a professional. I don't know why that's a thing, but
right.
I just can't do it.
And one thing as well is a nice little transition here as we set up. John Lester has a specific catcher. He uses the same catcher, and the catcher was brought over from the Boston Red Sox, and his name, David Ross. What do we know about David Ross?
We know a lot less about David Ross. The internet is not chock full of info on David Ross.
David Ross isn't getting a multi-million-dollar contract, right?
Well, it is multi-million dollars. I think he signed like a two-year, $5 million deal or something like that.
He's a backup catcher. He only really plays when John Lester pitches.
He is the valet for John Lester.
Ooh.
His name, his full name, I actually thought this was kind of cool. So his number is number three, and his name is David Wade Ross, D. Wade, number three.
Wow, there you go.
So he
it's like Illuminati type stuff.
He's from Bainbridge, Georgia, Georgia's first inland port, for those keeping score at home. And he went to Auburn and Florida. He went to Auburn, I think, first 2 years, transferred, played 1 year at Florida. One of very few players that have played in the College World Series for two separate teams.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, he's John Lester's personal catcher. That is all I have.
Well, we know that he is also getting up there in age. This is his final season. He says he's going to retire after the year. The players, like the Chris Bryants and the Anthony Rizzos, like to tease him.
Correct.
They call him Grandpa.
They've created an Instagram account, a Grandpa Rossi Instagram account, where they follow him around and they post pictures and they do it for him, obviously, because I'm assuming he can't do it on his own.
Anyone over 40 can't.
Yeah, there's
that
like
stuff
a Grandpa
out.
Rossi Instagram account. It's actually relatively funny if you ever have the time to check it out.
All right, 312-981-7200. We're already getting some great stuff. Here's a good one for a Lester and Ross combo nickname: Master Blaster from the Mad Max series.
Okay.
Master Blaster. There you go.
I didn't really think about any nicknames for the combo itself. You know? Yeah.
Like, you know, when they come on, so you're just like, you're like Cisco and the Kid kind of thing.
Maybe in the break we'll think about that a little bit.
Matt Klein's in studio, Esmeralda Leon, Veronica Carter as well are going to play. Pete's going to play 312-981-7200. Calls are coming in. What do we think? What do we think of nicknames for John Lester and for David Ross? We'll be back. Stay with us. This is David Ross's walk-up song when he comes up the bat, which is awesome. We're playing Picnic tonight on the download, giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, star pitcher John Lester and his catcher David Ross. John Lester and David Ross, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Matt Klein's in studio with me, also Veronica Carter and Pete Zimmerman. Esmeralda Leon, of course, is going to judge the winners. Are you ready, Esmeralda? Are you feeling it?
Oh, yeah.
Are you bringing the same level of commitment tonight than you have in the past? She's so committed to this segment she avoids all research.
Yeah.
She doesn't pay attention to the players or the team or the Cubs. She's focusing. She wants her attention to be on what happens tonight.
She's America's judge. So she waits for us to present our case and makes her decision.
Yeah. I live in one of those soundproof booths a week before.
Right.
So I'm just now coming out of it. So I don't know what's been happening.
Yeah.
All week.
So there you go. So so tonight we will give you some choice cuts for John Lester and David Ross. Veronica, you have any thoughts on nicknames for John Lester or David Ross?
Well, you know, I was listening to you talk about John Lester, and I was thinking, is grape something? You got to have, because of the wine aficionado.
Grape.
Yeah, I got one. Roberto Fermente. How about that?
I like it. That's good.
All right, there we go. We're off and running. That's why Klein is here. All right, so 606 says, all right, my picnic for John Lester is Thumper. All right, Thumper.
You know,
that's tough because that's usually for bats, guys who hit.
Right,
he doesn't
hitter.
Hit.
Right. He great at sack bunting in the 12th inning, but he's not
known that's
for
right.
His...
That's right. 224, or let's see, 312 says John Lester, Corky, because of his wine.
Mm.
Again, I'm not sure how that played. I mean, I guess wine cork. 262 says Rothschild.
Rothschild.
Yeah. That's like kind of like Rothschild. I'm not sure.
Like Rothschild?
Like Ross, like David Rothschild.
Okay.
262 says the grizzled one. So, like, you could do something because he's got a little, like, beard. You could do, like, Grizzly. Grizzly Adams.
Okay.
Kind of thing. Let's go to 847 says Listerine. Ooh.
Or like Listerine, I'm assuming is what they're getting at.
Yeah, Listerine because... He leaves a fresh taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
Hey, okay.
So I got some Tacoma, some background on Tacoma.
Okay. This is where John Lester.
This is where John Lester is from. I'm actually going to throw one stat out that I think is just kind of crazy. It actually has nothing to do with our nickname game. In 2004, in my research, I found that Tacoma was voted the most stressed out city in America. Right.
Maybe that's why he can't throw to first base.
Now, in 2006, 2 years later, you want to talk about the light bulb going on? It was the most sexually healthy city in the United States of America. 2 years after being the most stressed out city
they
in the United States.
They
figured it out.
Figured it
but here's another thing. Nickname-wise, Tacoma is also known as the City of Destiny.
Ooh.
And... Grit City.
Grit. Okay, so Grit might be something.
I like Grit City, True Grit, or just Grits.
Grits.
You know,
Southern guy.
David Ross is referred... he's not a Southern guy because he's from the Pacific Northwest, but David Ross is actually referred to him as along with, like, John Lackey as just being true rednecks. So, like, seriously, like, that's the exact quote. I think it was, like, his exact Twitter comment was, because he was embroiled in that...
They were Lester is known for his Boston Red Sox days.
The beer and chicken, video games in the locker room, And they got Ross for a quote like, hey, what's your take on this whole thing? He's like, oh, yeah, Lackey and Lester.
Oh, yeah, they were together.
Bunch
right.
of rednecks.
They were both you know? In they were yeah. both in Boston at the same time.
At the time, it was, the,
Beckett,
it was
right.
the 2011 season where they collapsed. They were division leaders.
Yeah.
They ended up not making the playoffs. And Beckett, Lackey, and Lester were accused of eating fried chicken, drinking beer, and playing video games in the locker room.
While they were getting ready
while,
for games.
Well, no, right. while the games were going on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it would be off days where they weren't pitching.
And they're like, we're going to go back
Yeah,
here.
Like, Clay Buckles is on the mound, and they're like, well, whatever. Yeah.
okay.
There's no way we're coming in.
630 says, for Lester and Ross, why not call them dueling banjos? You know, based on that.
Sure.
773 likes... Keystone for Lester. Keystone, double meaning, foundation of the pitching rotation, and also he lets everyone steal like Keystone Cop.
How about for the no pickoff move to first base? We call him free base.
Free base.
Free base. Like he.
That would be, yeah, that's
I mean, I know
good.
It's
that's
a drug reference.
Yeah, right.
But I mean,
good.
It's probably we can't.
847's got, how about John, who loves you, baby? Lester. John's bald, and so was Kojak. That's what. That's great. I like this one. John Lester would be the Southpaw striker, and David Ross would be the pit boss. Oh, I like that, pit boss.
Well, we did. Yeah, we did pit boss for. I tried to do it for Bryant because of the Vegas.
Yeah.
Actually, you know who did it was Martyr.
Right.
Rob threw out pit boss because the.
But
Vegas
I like
connection.
Pit boss because he's the guy behind the plate. He's the older guy. He's,
right.
He's kind of like he's in charge.
And
of...
even though there's no Vegas connection, it actually might play better.
Right.
With Ross.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Down. Let's go to Bobby. What do you got for picnic, Bobby? What are you thinking?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great
how about you
tonight, man?
Thanks, Chopper buddy.
Bobby from Cicero. Okay, here's one for you. I just laid down to go to bed and just hit me in the head. How about a brilliant finish with Lester and Gloss?
Lester and Gloss.
Lester and Gloss.
Okay.
A brilliant finish. I love it.
With Lester and Gloss. There you go, guys.
That's good. That's good, Bobby. Thank
Done.
You.
Yeah, we might as well wrap it up.
Yeah, that's yeah. He nailed it.
Nailed it.
Have a good night, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for calling in. All right, let's go to Sheila. Sheila, what are we thinking about for picnic for John Lester and David Ross?
Yeah, I don't have any individual names, but I know that David Ross is sort of looked up to by a lot of the players as, like, he's sort of a coach and mentor to them, so I don't know if that could help you come up with anything. But for the two of them together, I was thinking, like, the bromancers.
Right.
They got sort of a bromance
thing going
on.
They do have a bromance thing going on, don't they? All right, that's good. I like that. I like these sort of, like, a nickname for both of them. All right, thank you, Sheila. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. 630 says grits and grapes.
You know, he's he like
that's a good one.
He throws a cutter, and he's a hunter, so cutter and buck for Lester. Johnny Cash, very simple. He cashed in for quite a bit of money. Actually, you know, Johnny Cash actually wrote a song about his pickoff move. You know what it's called?
What's it
called? You know what it's called? 5 feet high and rising.
708 says, how about Sweet Thunder?
For who?
I'm guessing for, there's a lot of Thunder references for Lester, I guess. One catcher, Lester. Lester, how about Buckshot? 630 says Buckshot.
Okay,
that
the hunting
good,
deal.
Because
yeah.
it's a hunting thing.
The rifleman.
Uh-huh. How about Butch and Sundance Kid? For the combo.
For the combo. Yeah.
A lot of good stuff coming in here. There used to be a newspaper called Grit. 606 is letting us know.
The newspaper was called Grit?
Yeah.
It was probably some zine in like Portland or something like that. It probably wasn't even like a newspaper.
Right, right.
Yeah.
John Lester, 630 says Mountain Man. Ooh.
All right.
I don't know where the mountain comes from.
Mount Rainier maybe in Seattle? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he lived in Mountain Man. 815, Ever Lester.
Ever Lester.
Ever Lester. I don't know if that works, but.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. All right. And then 606 says, how about Moe and Curly? That could work.
Moe
would be Ross, I guess, and Curly would be Lester, but it almost works. All right. We're playing picnic for John Lester and David Ross. We're off to a great start. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back and finish it up to the second half of picnic. We've got John Lester and David Ross. just like Bobby. He sat down, got ready for bed, and then light bulb went off. 312-981-7200. And, you know, if we pick his, he's going to get a Pequod's pizza. So if you're laying down right now and you're like, all right, it's time to go to bed. I got no ideas. Oh, my God, I got an idea. It could be a pizza. That's how it works. Matt Klein in studio. We'll continue. Stay with us. Everyone is having fun. Here's to the Cubs. Victory. Singing Go Cubs Go. On the radio. Go Cubs Go. I'm with another new Go Cubs Go. I love the Wrigley Field. I love it, man. I don't know where you come up with it. Go Cubs Go.
On Waveland Avenue.
Like when you're name checking streets around Wrigley.
That would sound like that sounded like Britpunk.
Yeah,
too.
Right.
Like,
yeah. They're like, you know, well,
bollocks.
Chelsea Daggers work so well for the Hawks. We should come up one for the Cubs. That's what that is.
On Waveland Avenue, we'll take the all the way to Ashland.
It's just all streets.
Yeah. We're gonna go up Grace.
High Tops is a Starbucks now.
I think we're in the wrong business. We should be making novelty Cub songs for the playoff run. That, you know, that's coming. And Pete Zimmerman is here to give them airtime. 312-981-7200. It's a download. I'm Justin Kaufman. And we are playing Picnic. Of course, this is where we're giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to each one of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. I feel like we wasted Tommy La Stella. He's Tommy Gunn, but now it doesn't look like he's going to come back, so... That was a waste, but
he might be back. You go to the 40-man roster on September 1st, so you got a couple weeks.
I've never seen anything like it where the guy's like, I'm gonna wait till the rosters expand, so I'm just gonna go home.
Not only is that part of it unprecedented, but then you get the organization that says, we're just gonna let this guy go home and clear his head. I mean, this doesn't happen anywhere else, and. I think it, part of it is maybe that, you know, there's a little respect to a guy that was actually playing really well, and he had to go down. There's so many weird rules. I'm not even going to get into them. But there's so many crazy rules where Chris Coughlin had to come up and La Stella had to go down. We had to send him down. And it wasn't performance-based. It was because of
roster
moves.
Yeah, so he's like, well, why can't I just go home for a month?
Right. So I was talking to Eric about it earlier, and we were like, you know, it's like, okay, it sucks, and... And I was just like, I don't care if he goes home and then just comes back on September 1st. I really don't.
If he's ready to play, right.
If he's ready to play. And Eric's like, no, he's got to play. He's got to play in the minors.
Well, there's a little tradition. There's at least a
But he made a great point. The other players also will be like, all right, come on, dude.
Yeah, right. That's the big part.
That's a huge part.
Because we were saying, like, even though it's the minor leagues, the Iowa Cubs were let down. The guy didn't show up.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
All right, we're playing Picnic tonight. John Lester and David Ross. John Lester and David Ross. All right, we've got some good stuff. All right, 312-981-7200. How about this one? Bald Eagle for John Lester. The Bald Eagle.
Ooh. Yeah, I like it. It's American.
Yeah, it's American. He's a hunter.
Yeah.
He can't hunt a bald eagle. He's also like, he's a majestic bird when he's throwing the home plate, but he can only see out of one eye.
Dude, it's just power.
He can't see first base.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah, exactly.
You really make that one work. I mean,
yeah, right. We don't. You know, how mad do we get? Like, everybody's like, well, you know, we're screwed. The guy's 12-4 with a sub-3 ERA, and like, well, we're screwed once we hit the playoffs. We'll be exposed for him not being able to throw to first base. And I'm like, whatever.
Somehow, you know? This guy is in his 10th year or whatever, doing fine.
Right.
You know, like he's been able to pitch at a high level.
It's so weird, though.
All right. So on David Ross' side, I've got the Butler.
The Butler, yeah.
And that's a good one because the Butler, essentially, he only plays for John Lester. He's like John Lester's Butler.
What about John Stewart?
How about Caddy?
He's the Caddy. Yeah. The Looper.
All right. Yeah. So let's keep going.
The catcher in the shy. David Ross. Holden Ballfield. What was the one guy's name in Catcher in the Rye? Oh, my God. The guy that he was roommates with, that was like a total stud.
Never mind.
All right, go ahead. Let's go. Let's move on.
And now we move to literature.
Yeah, he is.
All right. So here we go. So 312's got the Butler. And maybe the Rasta Man for David Ross. The two of them together, Starsky and Clutch. I don't know. okay, 815, The Beer Hunter for Lester.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, beer the and beer a hunter. The hunter. Beer hunter.
The beer controversy of 2011, plus he's a hunter.
Now, the only hard part is that this is something that's going to be endearing to him. He doesn't want the controversy
Listen,
of beer to always
Yeah, be. We might have to just do away with the endearing
yeah.
thing these days. I mean...
Well, I mean, because you want people to, you want this is like an unabashed fan exercise.
Right.
You want this to be right. the nickname that everyone, the lovable nickname.
When it comes to chanting right. and casual right. conversation where you mention
right.
the nicknames, right?
If you go the Beer Hunter, they go, what? And you're like, well, you know, he loves hunting and he was involved in a beer controversy in Boston back in 2011. Yeah, it's just
how about,
too much.
How about David Wade Ross? So D. Wade. Flash, you know, that's isn't that
D-Wade's nickname.
What a hot flash. That's like you know, like the old flash, you know, hot flash. How about that one?
Hot flash.
I like hot flash.
All right. For Ross and Lester, 847 says The Sound and the Fury.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that means.
708 says Lester the Jester and King David.
All right.
6-3. There's a lot of people getting together. They like the idea of them being
the
sort of,
combo.
We should probably do like two and a combo.
The battery that is
right.
Lester and Ross.
630 says Wino and Pops.
Okay. So battery. What about battery? Energizer,
battery.
Duracell. What other battery companies are there?
Yeah, right. Like the Energizer
I don't know.
Bunny.
Yeah.
262 Winchester for Lester.
Winchester. How about Chester Copperpot? Who was the Goonies
yeah.
character that, you know, in his death, he led a group of young kids to the promised land.
Right.
By them, what did they take? Like his dynamite and that like gold
yeah, they
key
took,
or
yeah,
whatever?
They were able
so
to take some stuff off.
Lester Copperpot leading a group of young men to the promised land, you know.
I think that might be a stretch because then
well,
again,
yeah,
like,
right. Again, we're not
on,
yelling, Lester, let's go, Lester Copperpot.
Yeah, see, exactly. And it'd be like, I guess that works, Lester Copperpot.
It doesn't work at all. I just wanted to throw it out there.
No, I'm going to put it down. I like it. Lester Copperpot.
The white tornado I got. Oh, actually, I got a description. I don't know if I could say why.
Well,
can I make a drug reference on WGN Radio?
I guess you could. It is 720 WGN, so already with White Tornado, I'm like, all right, slow
Never
your
mind.
Roll.
Never mind.
I think we all get it, right?
No, it's yeah.
even worse?
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let me
We're
see
done.
What else we got here. E1. that's good. That's a good one.
E1.
E1. That's good. For David Ross, we've got the sage.
Okay.
The sage, because he's a wise... herb. 705 likes the combo Laverne and Shirley. I don't know why that would be.
Bainbridge. He's from. He went to. By the way, he went to a high school. It was the name of the high school was Florida High School.
Just the name.
That
of
was
high
it.
Was
the
Florida
name of the high school,
high school
was Florida High School. They were the Demons.
214 likes the Rifleman.
Yeah.
Rifleman.
That's for Lester. We can. That's so. That's like marksman.
Yeah, right.
Rifleman, like woodsman, trapper.
708 playing off of David Ross's middle name Wade Halen. I don't even. Wade? I don't even.
What
know
does that even mean?
I don't know.
Wade Halen.
We're getting deep into the weeds now.
Wade
Halen.
What's that a
so
playoff?
Like Van Halen, but
right, but Wade and Van.
Yeah, right.
Where's that connection?
Maybe it's a. Typo.
It could be.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. We'll keep them rolling here. What we'll do, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get at these. I mean, we have some serious competitors here. I've already know what I like for David Ross and Lester. You keep going down the list. So there's a lot of stuff here. 312-981-7200. We'll wrap up Picnic for John Lester and David Ross coming up after the break. Stay with us. Come on. every genre has got a novelty Cubs song. I'm surprised there haven't been more hip-hop rap Cubs songs. You'll get that for the Bears, you know, or the Bulls. The Bears, when the Bears go to the playoffs, like the 10 years ago with the 2006 team, oh my God, it was just like not blue and orange, blue and orange, blue and orange. You know, like just, it's a little bit over the top.
I'll hit the studio this week.
Good. That's Matt Klein is here. He has promised to hit the studio. That's always a good thing. All right. We're playing Picnic for John Lester and David Ross tonight. All right. We're getting close to the end. This is going to be an exciting photo finish because I feel like we've got some really tight, it can go any which way at this point. Let's go to, you know, let's see. 312 says for John Lester, vintage.
Vintage wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wine related.
Okay. I'll write that down.
I'm surprised you didn't like, is Roberto Fermente like not
Fermente
a front,
no, I had that circle. I think that's a really good one.
What about his walk off bunt? Like Sean Bunston or like Bunter S. Thompson?
Bunter.
Or let's see what else.
Oh, that's good stuff. Combo name 262 likes Catcher and the Guy. 708 says for Ross, how about K Cups with a backwards K?
Okay. All right. Beer Hunter. I love Beer Hunter.
309's like who? They say who?
Who?
Huh? What? 312 says for John Lester, how about the human rain delay? Because he pitches so slow.
All right.
630's got a one that's together, David and Goliath.
David and Goliath. Okay.
All right.
That works.
Let's try Mark. Mark, what do you like? Mark, what do you got for John Lester?
I was thinking like Devin Lester.
There you go. You know what? You can't lose with something like that because everyone's
because it's
like,
a bear and a cub.
Yeah, it's a bear and a cub.
It's a bear and a cub.
I love
both
it.
Both bear species.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Mark.
Have a good night.
You too. All right, let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn, what do we like, Marilyn?
The Bald and the Beautiful.
I like that a lot. Bald and the Beautiful.
That's got to be the combo name.
Right?
Which one's beautiful, though?
Right.
Because they're both bald.
Yeah, they're both bald.
Which one would you like to be the beautiful one?
Well, I don't know. You can choose.
Okay.
All right, I like that, Marilyn. Good job. Marilyn comes through. That's a good one. The Bald and the Beautiful. You're right. They're both bald.
I'm trying to think of like the name, like Ross Perot. Bob Ross. Remember Bob Ross, the painter?
Bob Ross, the painter.
Rick Ross, the rapper.
Right.
Betsy Ross. Didn't she make the American flag?
Yeah. So there could be like, what if you did like the Bald Eagle and Betsy Ross?
That's way too much America.
That's a lot of America.
Yeah.
When these guys pitch, it's like a 4th of July picnic.
It's the grand finale of a fireworks display every time these guys take them out.
630 says for John Lester, how about Skeeter?
I'm going to need
a skeet
an
shooter.
Oh,
reference.
Okay. All right.
Skeeter. All right. And we got a lot of good stuff tonight.
We do.
All right. So why don't I break it down here? Why don't we go to you, Matt, first, and then we'll do Pete. I haven't heard from you a peep on these. I mean, are you a John Lester fan? Are you the kind of fan who.
I am a John Lester fan, although. He brings up bad memories for me every time he pitches, in that I was working for somebody and I wanted to take some time off to go with my friend on vacation, and I wasn't allowed to. Yeah. And my friend ended up seeing John Lester pitch a no-hitter.
Oh, yeah.
So it brings back some bad memories every time I see him out there. Oh. It's like I could have seen him pitch a no-hitter because, you know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Not everybody sees a
no-hitter, right?
A no-hitter.
It'd be great to be in the – we both were in the stands earlier this season when Jake Arrieta had struck out like 12 guys in the first four innings or whatever. We were like, there's going to be a 20-strikeout game here, and then it fizzled because that's what baseball does.
This team actually still did have quite a few Ks in that game, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
18 combined. The team had like a combined like 18 or something.
Yeah, right. 262 says Chris Cross for David Ross. Like the band Criss Cross or like Criss Cross Applesauce?
Let's go with the band.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. So let's see, Matt. For John Lester, as I kind of pull these out, I say Listerine, Grits, Lester Copperpot,
mm-hmm.
Buckshot, Beer Hunter, and Bald Eagle.
And Roberto Fermente.
And Roberto Fermente.
I like Grits, Grit City, Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to allow me to pick Roberto Fermente, but I think that, or Lester Copperpot. I like Beer Hunter or Grits, and I'm going to be honest with you, I can't pick. So I'm just going to throw both of those out there. I'm not the judge. It's for Esmeralda to decide.
It's always tough because I'm like, would you go with the Lester Copperpot is really funny.
It's funny, but that's something that's just like, just trying to be funny. Yeah. Like, that's not a good nickname, though.
Yeah, it's probably not.
It's not a good nickname.
Copperpot.
Yeah, right. Copperpot.
David Ross, we've got Pit Boss, The Butler, The Sage, or Hot Flash.
I like Hot Flash. Catcher in the Shy apparently doesn't have much traction. The Bainbridge Backstop. Holden Ballfield. I don't know why none of these are on these lists.
Right.
Hot Flash, I think, is going to be my go-to. Mm-hmm. The Butler's great, too. Once again, I actually have those two for Ross and then the two for Lester. I could go either way.
Yeah. Hot Flash is weird. I mean, Hot Flash is good, but you got to go pretty deep to explain mm-hmm. that. You're like, oh, you know, D Wade, his middle name is Wade. His nickname is Flash. He's older, should be Hot Flash. Like, I think you go a little too far in that regard. The Butler and the Pit Boss are my favorite.
Well, you know, I just say, you know, if you don't get it, man, you just don't. I mean, get with it.
That's always been your MO. You're just like,
that's absolutely.
I don't have time
keep
to
up.
Slow down.
Hey,
I can't slow down.
Hey, man. Chicago, keep up.
That's the name of your podcast. Yeah. Keep up with Matt Klein. Hey, you can't figure it out? Not my problem. Pete Zimmerman. Okay, buddy. You heard the ones that I've got for John Lester. I've got Listerine, Grits, Lester Copperpot, Devin Lester, Buckshot, Beer Hunter, Bald Eagle.
I am going to go with Beer Hunter as well. I think that's solid.
Okay. All right. And on the other side, I've got Pit Boss, The Butler, Hot Flash, The Sage.
I think I'm with Klein on this one in that, like, we don't, it's not about, we don't need to explain. Get better and understanding right. your stuff.
Right.
Hot Flash.
Hey, bandwagon. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Tonight, we're giving away Pequod's Pizza gift cards. Those who feel like they were the ones that did this. That's always harder. I feel bad for Pete because people will say the nickname and there'll be like six different people who text in the same thing. And then Pete has to be like, well, the first one, you know, gets it. So anyway, we're doing Pequod's Pizza gift card featuring world famous pizza with a signature caramelized cheese crust. Visit them in Chicago or Morton Grove or online at pequodspizza.com. Esmeralda, you ready?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to break these down. I just picked three, okay? And I did not pick Lester Copperpot.
Jill's on board with Lester Copperpot.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Ready? Beer Hunter, Grits, or Bald Eagle?
Or Free Base.
So Beer Hunter,
mm-hmm.
Grits, or Bald Eagle? He's a bald guy.
Right. I do like Bald Eagle.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's if you were going to be at a game, there's so much you could do with graphics alone.
Right.
Think of the graphic. Think of the American flag T-shirts you could do.
He could do a thing where he stands looking majestically out into the crowd.
You could have a bald eagle like at the beginning of the game where he comes off of the hand and he flies around Wrigley before the playoff game and he lands on the mound.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know what? They can do some sort of video. Screen or, Photoshop thing with that.
Or like the bullpen catcher catches the eagle on his arm as Lester throws his final pitch.
And then you also like just think of the airbrush T-shirts alone.
Bald eagle.
Bald eagle it is. I think that's a winner. Beer Hunter I like, but I also feel like you got to do a lot of explaining on that one, and it does have negative connotation because it was a scandal. The bald eagle. All right.
The bald eagle Lester.
Yeah.
All right.
It fits. All right, Esmeralda, let's go to the catcher, David Ross. We've got the Pit Boss. We've got the Butler. And we got Hot Flash. Those are the three. So we've got the Pit Boss, the Butler, and Hot Flash. What do you like?
I think I'm going with Pit Boss.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you like about Pit Boss? Pit Boss was a big winner at the beginning.
Because one, Boss.
Mm-hmm.
Pit Boss.
Ross.
Aren't Pit Bosses are like the main men
Pit Ross.
In the casino.
Yeah, right.
Right.
In the casino,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. And they're, you know, at the end of the day, isn't baseball just a big gamble?
Yeah. Oh, right. Look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pete Rose.
Yeah.
I do like the pit boss because I feel like David Ross is the guy who wears the tie in the clubhouse who's like, you know what, guys? I got to take that 100. I got to get change.
100 going out.
100 going out.
100 going out. He just hit his 100th home run, too.
See?
So it's actually a very
100th going apropos. Out. We did it.
Yeah.
We did
100
it.
Going out. 100 going out. Color. Color coming in.
100 going out. I like that a lot. Yeah. Great job, Esmeralda. I think we got winners tonight. Matt Klein, always a pleasure. The Bald Eagle and the Pit Boss are the ones for David Ross and John Lester tonight. John, the Bald Eagle Lester, and David, the Pit Boss Ross. Ooh, that feels good. This is like UFC fighters.
Absolutely.
We really put this together.
I love it.
Another great picnic, and we will be back next week with, I mean, we're getting
down to the nitty-gritty here.
Get some nitty-gritty, so it's going to get good. So stay tuned.
Absolutely.
That's going to do it for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez up next. Patty Vasquez, pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Tomorrow night, great show. Jeff Bridges is going to join us. Fun as that to have Jeff Bridges on the program, so that's coming up. And much, much more here on the download. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.